It's showtime.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. It's a joyous day, and off we go. Merrily rolling along on the 24th day of September 2020. This is going to be a date that's hard for me to forget, and I hope I don't. We'll get to everything that goes with the beginning of the program, but I'll begin by simply saying I have a new grandson. Agnes has a new grandson. We have a new grandson. Don't know when we'll see him in person, you know, Don-demic and all, but out in the wild wastes of New Mexico, a new little human has entered the world. I've seen pictures. He's a handsome little fella, and I am just as proud as punch. For a moment, I actually thought maybe I'd quit smoking a little bit early. Because the urge to fire up a cigar has nothing to do with the nicotine addiction, but everything to do with just tradition. And so maybe I'll stop at the Rippy Mart and get me a bubblegum cigar and chew on it or something. I don't know. But he's happy and he's healthy. He's got a beautiful, lusty cry. Everything's where it should be. And he came into the world just maybe a little over an hour ago, a couple hours maybe. And I could just bust. I'm so tickled. Hi, I'm Grandpa Bob. And it's Thorn in the Side Thursday here at the Horn. Thanks to all of y'all for the congratulations. Thank you to Billable Rick, and thanks to Ralphs, and thanks one and all. We'll get to, I'm just a little beside myself. Whatever awful shit was going on, kind of, I took a 10-second breather and just pondered that little life out there. Maybe, I don't know, maybe come spring or summer or 2022. Don't know. But at some point in time, maybe I'll get to get out there and see him. Maybe Agnes and I will get out there to get to see him. Hell, he may be driving a car by the time that fucking Don-demic. Fucking Trump. Thank you, Darlene. Thank you. So it is. It's Thorn in the Side Thursday. And this is the Horn. And if you'd like to augment your listening experience with the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza known as the Horn Chat Room, well, feel free to run on by, head on .live, click on Chat Room, and if you've never picked out a screen name and password before, pick one out now, and you'll be immediately greeted upon your entrance by the likes of Anatole and Silent R. Lamar and Squeaky. And capably moderated by a longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator, Sparky, who, being a third-stage guild navigator, has folded space to become Man Cave. He is capably assisted by his trusty assistant, midweek utility chat room moderator and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. I'm sorry, I'm just tickled. We had a little bit of a little bit of FaceTime with our daughter, and she showed us our grandson, and he saw fit to give a little howl, and it made both of our souls light up. Yeah. Oh, don't worry, we'll get back into the swamp in a minute. Every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude. This program is no different. And so on this 24th day of the month, thanks go out to our 24th day of the month subscribers. That means thanks to Pam in Washington State. Thank you to Josh. Thank you to Samson. Thank you very kindly for being partial sponsors of the program. And let's see, from the Big Lebowski, Steve in New York reminds us, from the Big Lebowski on newborn babies, I guess that's the way the whole derned human comedy keeps perpetuating itself down through the generations. Westward the wagons, across the sands of time. Baby. The baby. Yeah. Oh, golly. I hope I get to know the little guy. Yeah, I know. Billable Rick says your coffee break's over. Now get back to the shit show. Yeah, and believe me, there's an abundance of it. But it's Thorn in the Side Thursday, and there's plenty of horrifying news out there. But from Vietnam comes the announcement that the intrepid police forces there have seized over 320,000 pounds of cocaine? No. Tons of fentanyl? Mm-mm. Nope. Cases of illicit Nikes? No. Vietnamese police have seized over 320,000 used condoms. Because apparently there's a market for them. They get re-rolled and resold to unsuspecting consumers. It's Thorn in the Side Thursday. Oh, funny, funny humans. Video footage showed, according to the BBC, dozens of bags that, taken all together, weighed 794 pounds in a warehouse down in Binh Duong province. There was a raid there, you see, because, well, you see, Vietnamese police actually, try to stop crime instead of busting through apartment doors and blowing away a sleeping emergency medical technician. Further investigation was done on the purloined prophylactics. In addition, a woman who was said to own the warehouse was arrested. According to the authorities, the condoms had been washed and reshaped with wooden dildos. Jesus, you got to worry about splinters, don't you? And then they were repackaged in anticipation of resale. Yeah. When they arrested the woman at the warehouse, she said she was paid 17 cents per kilo for the condoms. This according to Vietnam state broadcaster VTV. And these are just the ones that they caught. Others had already made it into the stream of consciousness. I mean, consciousness. Yeah. Ha, 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 says Jeremy in Vermont. I already ate dinner. Nice try. Just anything to sort of divert from some of the madness and misery. At this hour, Sparky lets us know that Nitwit Nero is in Charlotte, North Carolina. The signs on the stage say, America First Healthcare Plan. Sparky asking the eternal question, what kind of bullshit will this be? It's going to be some Trumpian bullshit. I think that's the obvious answer. At Ron in Raleigh says, did you say that was Bindong Province? Bindong Province. I did say that. And it's really the BBC. It's not the Onion. And meanwhile, Billable Rick says, Jeremy, stop telling us Bob didn't ruin your dinner. Really? We're going to go back to that? And I guess we're going to go back to that. Thank you very kindly to Jimmy. Congrats, Grandpappy Bob. Much obliged. Thank you, Jimmy. And this, and thank you, Flavio. Flavio says, congratulations on becoming a grandpa. No, I'm already a grandpa. I got three grandbabies. They're anywhere from middle school down to late elementary. Or maybe they're all middle school. 13, 12, and 10. Yeah. So this is the latest. And his mama is the littlest of ours, our doodle. Yeah. Thank you, Flavio. James in Illinois says, condoms pre-lubricated. What do you suppose they did with the jizz? I don't even want to know. Maybe they took it to the bank. You know, the sperm bank. Maybe they laughed all the way to the bank. Yeah. No, but this also. Bob! You know what that sound means. On a cold Tuesday night in November of 1971, my parents attended a high school football banquet that featured Woody Hayes as the guest speaker. Hayes did not just gratuitously attend the banquet. His motives were as obvious as he was in town to recruit the local star football player. That player would go on to start as a middle linebacker for Ohio State and was drafted by the Cincinnati Bengals, but never played an NFL game due to injuries. According to the Padalaska, Ohio coroner, former Ohio State standout Ken Kuhn committed suicide in 2006 as he was addicted to prescription drugs due to football injuries. That very same night, my parents were attending the banquet with Woody Hayes. My sister and I were at home watching the Tuesday night ABC movie special, Brian's Song. And our parents were horrified when they arrived home to find their children crying. I remember I cried too. Brian's Song was a great movie about an African-American football player, Gale Sayers, who just died yesterday. And a white football player, Brian Piccolo, who died of cancer in 1970. Initially, the two competed against one another for a spot in the Chicago Bears backfield, but they eventually became friends and both would share a spot together in the Bears backfield. The Bears didn't achieve much on the field in those years. Actually, they were one of the worst teams in football history. The Bears were so bad that Billable Rick's father decided to pack up the family, leave Chicago, and relocate to Iowa. However, one could say the Bears won a championship off the field when they allowed Brian Piccolo and Gale Sayers to room together, as the Chicago Bears became the first team in NFL history to have interracial roommates. Both Kuhn and Sayers died of injuries directly related to playing football, with Kuhn having chronic pain and Sayers having dementia. I hope football and death don't become synonymous, but I fear with the COVID virus that is a real sad possibility. On the other hand, says Joey, I'm worried about another potential death this very November that is the death of democracy. Last night, after watching Rachel Maddow, I went out on the emotional ledge as I was horrified with her thorough and excellent synopsis of the potential of what the 9 swing states could potentially do with the Electoral College electors. When I mention death of democracy, that's not hyperbole, considering those 9 states could actually ignore the will of the people and install their own electorates, or electors, and hand a second term to this monarchical maniac. Ironically, returning to the previous story, Brian Piccolo died on June the 16th, 1970. And on that day in 1858, Abraham Lincoln began his campaign to become president of the United States. Actually, the states were not very united back then. And this prompted Lincoln to say, "A house divided against itself cannot stand." So thank you, Brian Piccolo and Gail Sayers, for your attempts to bring the races together, and may both of you run together in backfields of the great beyond. Sadly, the monarchical monster in the White House has been Putin a wedge right down the middle of this country, but we can stop him if we all show up and vote by the 3rd of November. What's that, giraffery? Bob, please talk Joey off the ledge, because I don't want to have a legend on my paws. This has been Joey's Journal for Thorn in the Side Thursday, the 24th day of September, with the legendary giraffery filling out his ballot, which is not easy with cloven hooves, I'll add. Well, there's only one way to avoid all of these problems, and that is to defeat COVID Caligula overwhelmingly. And I forget who it was. I'm back on the 4 to 12 shift. Bob Kincaid, amateur Uber driver, is back in action. So I had to take Ferg to Beckley to work earlier this afternoon, just a couple of hours ago. And coming back, I was listening to National Petroleum Radio. And I heard, Mara Liasson, maybe? I don't think it was Nina Totenberg. Could have been. Don't know. But sometimes the cluelessness of the multimillionaires in the for-profit media just astonishes me. She explained, whoever it was, that Donald Trump would interfere in the outcome of the election because Donald Trump's brand can't stand to lose. I confess I pounded the steering wheel with one fist at that point. I'd come to a stop sign. I was turning right to come home. I banged my fist off the steering wheel and said, "My God, you've got to be kidding me." Because it is Thorn in the Side Thursday, and this is pretty thorny. Really? Donald Trump doesn't want to leave on anything but a win? Because that's his brand? That's what we get from the professional journalists of the for-profit media? You gotta... How does that... The reason he has to remain in office is because there is a statute of limitations that will run out within a few months of January the 20th, 2021. You know, the statute of limitations for campaign finance violations, for which Michael Cohen was convicted on 2 felony counts, and in which Donald Trump is implicated in those 2 felony counts as individual one, and possibly a conspiracy count to go with it, so 4 felony counts. That's why he is so desperate to remain in office. To keep himself from being charged with the myriad crimes of which he is guilty, 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 guilty. Just don't ask NPR to explain that. Jesus. And that's just the tip of the iceberg, which is a Tuesday thing. Ron in Raleigh says, tell me, going back to the condom story. Tell me, says Ron in Raleigh, is that anywhere near Long Wang province? Just couldn't resist, could you, Ron? Mm-hmm. Oh, and Joey and Giraffe were awarded a cowbell by Billable Rick. Billable Rick. Ah. Steve in New York, the condom heist sounds like a really sticky situation. Why did I bring that story up? Well, because maybe it lightens the mood a little bit. Or, puts a little spring in our step. No, that's stretching things a bit. Oh, David says in South Carolina, Stan says, congratulations, my granddaughter gifted me a head cold from a South Carolina public school. Well, at this point in time, just be glad it's a freaking head cold, David. Yeah, Rusty says simply, bank dick. Actually, it was an NASA guy. Silent R. Lamar, back to the lead story. My question is, how much did she get for the sex? There were 320,000 condoms, Silent R. I think you may be ascribing to her some talents that are, to say the very least, superhuman. Call Adams, says Jeremy and Vermont. It's okay, Bob. Everyone enjoys a good stiff joke. This is going to go on for a while, isn't it? Well, I suppose that's okay. No. The little guy's name is not Donald. James in Illinois, observing. Does little guy know he's still in confinement? Out of one cell and into a slightly larger one. Well, fortunately, there's not a whole lot of the disease out there, so crossing my fingers. And my daughter has been quarantining for a very, very long time. Her husband, however, works in a hospital. A little worrisome. But we'll worry more later. Right now, we're just going to enjoy the unalloyed bliss of the moment. Yeah. Steve in New York, you've really birthed a bevy of funny comments, thereby tying the two stories leading the program together. And so, off we go into the news of the evening. In the aftermath of the manifest miscarriage of justice that took place in Louisville. And by the way, in case you were wondering, I've been doing some reading and heard here and there. I think it was Sonny Holston who told me about that. Might have been Jack in Shreveport. Over on The View, Sonny Holston, who's a lawyer, pointed out that Attorney General Cameron, that maggot lickspittle in Kentucky, who dummied up the grand jury proceedings in regard to the slaughter of Breonna Taylor. Yeah, Attorney General Cameron has utterly no trial experience whatsoever. He's just good at fixing things. Yeah. So in the protests that ensued yesterday and into the night, two police officers were shot. Neither of them were killed. Neither of them had the entirety of a police weapon filled with extra deadly duty ammo pumped into their bodies. One had some surgery. They're both going to recover. And they announced that a suspect was in custody. The claim is that the two cops were shot as they investigated a report of gunfire at an intersection where a large crowd had gathered. Now, remind me, who was it that was carrying guns up and down the streets of Louisville yesterday? Was that Black Lives Matter? No, as a matter of fact, it wasn't. It was white wing militias. Yeah. Just, you know, trying to keep up with the news. And then this morning, I usually either shut down the telescreen or go to something else when my filthy morning habit ends. But just after she opened her program, Stephanie Ruhle announced that she would be interviewing that paragon of balance, Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia. And of course, Senator Manchin appeared and said that he was appealing to the, and he misquoted Lincoln, but he was appealing to the better angels of our natures and hoping that a couple of Republicans more would come around and not participate in a monumentally hypocritical piece of performance art in regard to filling the vacancy left by the passing of Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Sorry about the pregnant pause there, but I had to stop, and I was seized by a case of the galloping guffaws. Better angels of the Republicans' nature. Yeah. But that it was the usual palaver. But the part that grabbed me was when Joe explained, because once again, Stephanie Ruhle did that thing that the multimillionaires of the for-profit media do, and she asked him, how are you going, she said, well, West Virginia loves Trump. How are you going to get them to understand that this is important, that we not, that Ruth Bader Ginsburg not be replaced until after the election? And of course, that immediately sent me right out the door to eat dirt and run rabbits, because once again, there we were with another assumption being made about my poor, bedraggled, put upon state that everyone here has a MAGA t-shirt and a MAGA hat and some MAGA gloves and MAGA underwear, and women got MAGA bras and MAGA high heels, and the guys got MAGA dress shoes and hunting boots, and it's all just MAGA, 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 MAGA around here. Not here. Thank you, dear.
Yeah, Maggie.
I told him about our new little grandbaby.
Yay! On the ground.
He's on the ground.
That's right. The eagle's landed.
But of course, we're not that here. After all, Nitwit Nero only won. Well, there are 35 or 38% of us who went out and voted with our big primate brains instead of our amygdalas, our lizard brains, back in 2016. But by God, you'd never know it to listen to the multimillionaires. Nope, you just wouldn't. But the best part of it, though, was when Joe Manchin, he's such a fascinating little fella. Joe Manchin explained that, well, back in 2016, West Virginians was upset because they'd seen the decline of the co-industry, and they was mad, and they wanted somebody that would make it better. You can't make things better when you're dealing with a finite natural resource that's been relentlessly mined for over 100 years and you're pretty well tapped out. And so that's why they voted for Donald Trump. And then he went on to say, Joe Manchin did, that in the 4 years of the Trump administration, more coal jobs have been lost in West Virginia than were lost in pretty much the entirety of the Obama two terms. But try to explain that. You try to get the maggots to understand that. But even that was not the part that made my pink little ears perk up. No. It was when Joe said, oh, and well, just by way, I've told this story before, but way, 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 way back when Ferg was in eighth grade. Well, eighth graders in this state take something called the Golden Horseshoe Test. It's a social studies test and a history test. I mean, history is part of social studies. And 1% or less of the people, of the youngins who take it, get to be knights of the Golden Horseshoe and ladies of the Golden Horseshoe. And there's a highfalutin ceremony down in Charleston at the Capitol and everything. Well, Ferg is an actual knight of the Golden Horseshoe. He scored that highly on his knowledge of all things West Virginia. And so we were sitting there in the auditorium that day. It was at the cultural center. And all the young, about-to-be-knighted lords and ladies were gathered there on the stage from all over the state of West Virginia. And Joe Manchin, who was governor at the time, came swanning in and gave an address about how these children were the future of West Virginia. And just like how these children are the future of West Virginia, maybe someday in the distant future, wind and solar might be an important part of the energy mix for our country, but right now we gotta depend upon coal. That wind and solar might be the fuel of the future, but right now in the present, coal keeps the lights on. And as I've said before, I suddenly felt Agnes's hand grip my forearm just above the wrist and pin it to the seat rest there, the arm rest, as she sort of whispered very quietly, don't do it. And so I took her advice, and I didn't say anything, but I sat there, and I committed that moment to memory. Joe Manchin using a proud moment for a bunch of young scholars to shill for the coal industry. But lo and behold, today, on Stephanie Miller's program on MSNBC, apparently he had a change of heart. Because in explaining why West Virginians were so profoundly pro-Trump, he told her all about how coal workers had built America. It's kind of true. And provided the energy that powered the Industrial Revolution and provided the energy that powered the great post-World War II economic boom and built the middle class. Stephanie Ruhle. Did I say Stephanie Miller? I'm sorry, Stephanie Ruhle. And went on like that and said, and this is the part that just, he said, but now, Stephanie, because he's so buttery voiced, but now, Stephanie, West Virginia needs a chance. Let us build you a wind turbine. Let us build you a solar panel, because we can do it in West Virginia. And I thought, son of a gun, how about that? Of course, way back when we were trying to put a wind project, a wind turbine farm on top of Coal River Mountain so that it wouldn't be blown to kingdom come, Joe and all the others like him said, oh, no, we can't do that. Coal's been good to us. And so they moved in and started blasting the bejesus out of the last extant unmolested mountain in that area. They even made a documentary about it called, oddly enough, The Last Mountain. Yeah. But it was kind of a seminal moment. See what I did there? Going back to the seminal, right? It was a seminal moment. Because Joe Manchin has apparently now entered the 21st century. When coal is on the way out, and renewable energies on the way in. Never ceases to amaze me, that Joe. As Steve in New York puts it, oh, bless his little pea-picking heart, he can't help it. I know. God love him. And as for the multimillionaires of the for-profit media, David in South Carolina, Stan observes, same as 2016. I'm so tired of these TV blabberheads repeating Donald's talking points about Biden not being exciting enough or lack of enthusiasm for Biden. I guess people think autocracy is exciting. Why do networks like MSNBC spout Donald's talking points for him? We shouldn't be trying to discourage Dems from voting. All these things, such as Latinos flock to Trump, Biden folks not knocking on doors, or lack of enthusiasm for Biden, are plausible if results confound the exit polls again. They can be used as the white economic anxiety argument from 2016 or the Hillary didn't visit Michigan or Wisconsin plausibility argument. By God, Joe's been to Wisconsin. But yeah, I heard that, why isn't he campaigning in person? Oh, Jesus Christ. I think in a pandemic, most people would rather receive a phone call, don't you? I mean, it's just me. Hey, thanks, Renee in D.C. Congrats and birthday wishes to your grandson and your entire family, and wishing your grandbaby a happy birthday. Thank you, Renee. Oh, dear, I didn't even ponder that. Darlene in Connecticut with a question. Did Joey just inadvertently cost us the election by admitting that the legendary giraffery is voting? Oh, my God, if Trump or any of his maggots heard that, then they'll most certainly claim the election is rigged because legendary giraffes are now voting. Shh, Joey. Ixnay on the giraffery, J. Odingvay. P.S. Darlene says, my day was made early on. Oh, mine too, because I heard it as well. Heard it live. It was beautiful. My day was made early on when Trump and Melanoma had the audacity to show up behind RBG's coffin as she lay in repose atop the U.S. Supreme Court steps to pay
their respects.
And people waiting to truly honor RBG started shouting, vote him out! Vote him out! And the cries got louder and louder, like a wave reaching a crescendo in one of the late RBG's beloved operas. Trump, of course, heard it loud and clear and couldn't handle it, so he quickly galumphed or trundled off with Valkyris in tow. The cries switched to, honor her wish, again to a crescendo. People ain't fucking around on this one, Bob. If the grief expressed for the past 2 days at the sometimes raucous viewing of RBG in repose is any indication, contrary to Trump's accusations, the elections will have been rigged if Trump wins. It does a lot of projecting, after all. That's where the truth lies in anything he says. My apologies for that pun. Apologies. We cherish puns here and even give cowbells out for them. PPSS, by the way, your Senator Joe actually showed his mug at RBG's viewing at the Supreme Court today. Well, Joe's good at that retail politics thing. Of course, by the time it gets around here, it'll be, he's a commie, pinko, Black Lives Matter, Antifa, fascist, Rosicrucian, Freemason, learned elder of Zion, Illuminati, Bohemian Grover. Yeah. Megan says, Sleepy Joe nickname's okay with me. Having a president hopped up on speed hasn't been that great for us. No, it isn't. And, of course, the best part of it all is that now, later in the day, that is, Nitwit Nero, who stood there as they screamed, he thought they were cheering for him, you see, but he stood there as they screamed, vote him out, vote him out, vote him out. And once he realized what they were saying, well, he turned tail and fled into the building. Yeah, no kidding.
Obamacare, the Obamacare disaster. But we have a lot of incredible things, positive things, and very good things, and money-saving things on health care. And then we're going to
Florida. In other words, nothing.
We have a big rally, and it'll be something. I hear there's a tremendous number of people. So we're not totally surprised by that, but that's okay. Tremendous number of people. Jennifer, go ahead. They're working to see if they can make a deal. And if they make a deal, they'll have to bring it to me, and I'll either approve it or not. To me, safety is the predominant factor, and we'll see if they can do that. But they're moving along, and let's see what happens. If they make a deal, that's fine, and if they don't, that's okay, too.
Mr. President, are the election results all legitimate if you win?
So we have to be very careful with the ballots. The ballots, that's a whole big scam. You know, they found, I understand, 8 ballots in a waste paper basket in some location. They found, it was reported in one of the newspapers that they found a lot of ballots in a river.
A lot of ballots in a river. Well, Bill Pepe the Frog Barr has opened an investigation. A total of 9 ballots in a single county, in a county that Nitwit Nero won overwhelmingly. And the DOJ has released a presser over it. FBI finds military mail-in ballots discarded in Pennsylvania. 100% of them were cast for President Trump. 9. 100% sounds like a lot more ballots than 9, doesn't it? Yeah.
They throw them out if they have the name Trump on it, I guess, but they had ballots.
No names on them.
Okay, well, they still found them in a river, whether they had a name on it or not.
How'd they find them in a river?
The other ones had the Trump name on it, and they were thrown into a waste paper basket. We want to make sure the election is honest, and I'm not sure that it can be. I don't know that it can be with this whole situation, unsolicited ballots. They're unsolicited, millions being sent to everybody. And
which is just so that we all know, I mean, I probably don't need to mention this, but that's a complete and absolute lie. Ballots don't just go out. Requests for ballots do. Just like in the primary here in West Virginia, every registered voter received a request for an absentee ballot. You didn't have to fill it out. Didn't have to request one. You could go and vote in person. We did here. Just now, interestingly, that no longer obtains. In the state of West Virginia, you have to physically request, you have to affirmatively request an absentee ballot now, because make West Virginia great, big old Governor Jim Justice in no way, shape, form, or fashion wants to get on the bad side of Donald Trump. But they were due to be mailed out on September the 18th, and they were. We received ours, and like I said, Agnes and I sat down, filled ours out, and then, it was day before yesterday. Yeah, it was Tuesday. I went and dropped them off at the county clerk's office, no problem. Unsolicited ballots. Is that the Adderall talking? I mean, or, no, he's just lying. He's just a pathological liar.
We'll see, but if you remember, Hillary Clinton just a week ago or so told Joe Biden, do not accept the results of the election under any circumstances.
That's not what she said. She said, do not concede on under any set of circumstances on election night, because most of the ballots, many of the ballots, will not have been counted by then. So, once again, the liar is doing what liars do best, that is, lying.
But you don't ask her that question. You only ask me the question. Go ahead.
So, but you didn't answer my question. You didn't answer my question.
Say it.
Lagoa. Do you plan to meet with Lagoa?
I don't want to make a comment on that, but we're going to make our decision on Saturday, but I won't comment on that. I will say this. I think Saturday afternoon, 5 o'clock, it's going to be a very important day in the history of our country. I think it's going to be a very monumental, very good choice.
What did you say to the family of Breonna Taylor, sir?
I'm getting very close to a final choice.
One follow-up. Governor Cuomo said the federal government can't be trusted on the vaccine. He said New York would have to approve
the federal Governor Cuomo said the federal government can't be trusted to...
Well, we're doing, we have numerous companies. We have Johnson & Johnson, we have Pfizer, we have Moderna, we have others too. They're great companies, the best in the world. So I think you'd put the people of New York at great risk, and he's done that. If you look at the nursing homes, 11,000 people died needlessly. So when you look at that, it's very sad. So we'll see. You'll have to see. But you have, these are great companies. These are being done by the really probably... some of the greatest companies in the world, when you think, with Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson, etc. I think that they're getting very close. As you know, they're in final testing right now, phase three, but final. They've given shots to everybody, to thousands and thousands of people. And so far, it looks very good, and it looks like it could happen fairly quickly.
What do you say to the family of Breonna Taylor?
I think it's a sad thing, and I give my regards to the family of Breonna. I also
regards.
Think it's so sad what's happening with everything about that case.
Regards? He gives his regards to the family of Breonna Taylor? Not condolences, not sympathy? Regards. Give my regards to Broadway. Remember me to Herald Square. Regards.
Including law enforcement. So many people suffering, so many people needlessly suffering, but with respect to Breonna, we give our regards to the family.
What do you think the protesters are fighting for?
Well, it was an honor to be nominated for two Nobel Prizes, so that was an honor, and
it's really not. Anybody can be nominated for the Nobel Prize. I mean, if somebody out there right now wanted to nominate me for the Nobel Prize, you know, you could. I wouldn't advise it. I wouldn't deserve it. But then again, neither does he. But since we're on the subject of the Nobel Prize, how about this? Asked about the poisoning with a Soviet-era neurotoxin of Alexei Navalny, huggable, lovable, cuddleable, sweet, adorable Vlad Putipoot said, and I'm not kidding, even said it to Emmanuel Macron,
we believe that Gospodin Navalny obviously poisoned himself to make glorious Putin presidency and glorious Mother Russia look bad.
To which, in French, I presume, Emmanuel Macron said, "Motherfucker, Mrs. Macron didn't raise no dummy. I was born at night, not last night." But no, Putin really said that Alexei Navalny poisoned himself.
He's poisoned self. He's poured a little bit in borscht, and next thing doesn't feel so good. Makes me, who is wonderful, compassionate leader of Russia, look very, very bad.
Yeah. So, since COVID Caligula here is talking about the Nobel Prize, Nobel Peace Prize, here's an idea. And God, this would stick in his craw. Oh, he'd throw a fit. He'd probably be so mad that he banged his tiny little fists on the desks and upset his and scattered his lines of Adderall. To me, I think it fairly obvious that the Nobel Peace Prize needs to go this year to Alexei Navalny, who, recovering from being poisoned by, on the order of, very likely, almost certainly, Vlad Putin. Alexei Navalny says he's going back to Mother Russia. No shit. Going back to Mother Russia to continue his struggle for democracy. That guy deserves the Nobel Peace Prize. Yeah. Yeah, he does. And it would, it would piss Nitwit Nero off so bad. Because it would be infuriating to his monumental maniac, psychopath, sociopath ego. But it would also put Putin in a very bad light. And when Putin's not happy, Donald's not happy. Yeah. I know. Matt says, I realize he occupies the office, but why does the press ask him questions under the assumption that what he says has any relationship to reality? Because Matt, the checks keep clearing. Whatever subject he speaks on, Matt says, he only makes the situation worse. Hopefully I can last until Election Day without losing my mind. Well, just keep on keeping on and hang in here with the rest of us, and we will keep each other from losing our minds. It's the best I can offer. And everything else was just window dressing. The real reason I played the clip was for what's coming up.
We'll see what's happening. I know that China now and India are having difficulty and very, very substantial difficulty, and hopefully they'll be able to work that out. If we can help, we'd love to help.
How do you feel about some of the chanting that was going on outside the Supreme Court, vote you out, and
fulfill, uphold her wish?
Well, I think that was just a political chant. We could hardly hear it from where we were. Somebody said there was some chanting, but they were right there.
Jesus, chanting? Chanting is what monks do.
Jesu Domine.
Whack.
Dona eis requiem.
They were screaming it at the top of their lungs. The only way he didn't hear that. Well, there's no only way he didn't. There's no way he didn't hear it. And you could see it on the looks of the look. You could see the look on his face when he turned away. I don't know. Maybe melanoma squeezed his hand or something and said, "It's time to galumph."
Next to the media, but we really could hardly hear too much. We heard a sound, but it wasn't very strong.
We heard a sound, but it wasn't very strong.
Well, okay. Let's see how loud it was.
Trump on your screen now. They have just arrived at the Supreme Court, where they will be paying their respects.
And he was wearing a mask.
To Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Let's watch this for a moment.
I guess he was afraid he was going to catch the Antifa from the last mortal remains of Ruth Bader Ginsburg or something.
We heard a sound.
Jesus, what a pathetic, sickening liar he is. Oh, well, thank you. Our buddy Gary Laborman out in New Mexico said, I hereby nominate you for a Nobel Peace Prize. Well, thank you, Gary, but if nominated, I will not run, and if elected, I will not serve. We'll have to give it to Miss Nobel Peace Prize 2020, first runner-up. Billable Rick asking, can an amateur Uber driver be nominated for the Nobel Prize? Just think, if I nominated you, you'd be in the same company as Clorox Claudius. Reason enough for me to say, if nominated, I will not run. And if elected, I will not serve. Yeah. Let's see. David in South Carolina, Stan. Donald, any reason to rush vaccine release to right before the election? Is it just a coincidence that you say the vaccine will be ready right before Election Day? Vaccines don't raise the dead, Donnie. That's 203,000 plus dead from COVID-19. Yeah. 203,000 plus. The Lincoln Project has dropped a new ad on precisely that topic.
Donald Trump says COVID-19.
Virtually nobody.
80% of COVID-19 deaths are over age 65.
It affects virtually nobody.
That's over 160,000 dead Americans over age 65.
It affects virtually nobody.
If you're over age 65, Donald Trump doesn't care if you die. Do you?
No.
The Lincoln Project is responsible for the content of this advertising.
And of course, once again, as usual, that is an unpaid ad, political ad placement. So, that. So we've reached the end of the first hour, the end of the filibobster. A little more detail, just to add some happy to the evening, some more happy. My little grandson, whom I have nicknamed Hamish. He's a hearty 7 pounds and 4 ounces and 21 1/4 inches long. Yeah. God, I want for him a long and happy life. And I hope to see a right smart chunk of it. So it is Thorn in the Side Thursday, and this is Conversation Radio. If you would like to avail yourself of conversation, well, there's multiple ways to reach the program. There's always Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. Also coming through the Skype line, 304-574-8178. And then there's the stress line, named for the inimitable, gone but not forgotten, Bill Mr. Stress Miller. And that is 844-843-4676. 844-THE-HORN. Matt, after I ran the audio there, Matt in San Francisco says, that fucker heard it all. You can tell by his body language. I think he thought they were chanting his name, and then he realized, oh,
I'm not at one of my rallies. This is how most Americans actually feel. Come on, Melanie. Reality spoken here. We got to go. We got to break camp.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And one of the enduring photos from Justice Ginsburg's lying in repose on the steps of the Supreme Court. A little girl in a Supergirl costume, including cape and carrying a white rose. The white rose is not lost on me. The symbol of the struggle against fascism that rose internally inside Nazi Germany. Little girl in a Supergirl costume carrying a white rose and offering a salute to Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Darlene says, RBG's passing got me thinking about the differences between lying in repose, lying in state, and lying in honor. Seems that it boils down to the real estate, how high up on the food chain those viewing the deceased are, and the level of pomp and circumstance. Lying in repose is reserved for someone of high stature, such as a government official being viewed by the peons, oops, sorry, I meant the public, at a government building other than the nation's capital. RBG will actually not be the first woman to lie in the nation's capital rotunda that Rosa Parks was, but she lay there in honor. Unfortunately, Billy Graham also got that distinction, although he was not equal to Rosa Parks in that regard. Ruth Bader Ginsburg will be the first woman or female government official to lie in state in the U.S. Capitol Rotunda. A signal honor that will then be dishonored by the nomination of whatever female jurisprudential maniac gets the final nod from Geezer Disgustus. Yes, yes, the Nobel Prize, N-O-B-L-E. This was a real ad from the Dipshit Donnie campaign, Steve reminds us in New York. I nominate you not for the Nobel Prize, but for the Nobel Prize, N-O-B-L-E. President Trump was nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize. Yes, the Nobel Peace Prize comes with a year's supply of Rice-A-Roni. the San Francisco treat. Right. So let's take a quick break. I blew past the Green News Report on Tuesday. I don't like to do that with both of them in any given week. So let's see what Brad and Desi have on the burner.
It's Thursday, September 24, 2020.
We have to deliver more than platitudes. We have to deliver more than proposals and promises.
California promises to end sales of new gas-powered vehicles by 2035. U.S. is seeing an alarming increase in combined heat waves and droughts, plus...
COVID-19 reminds us that humankind should launch a green revolution and preserve the environment and make Mother Earth a better place for all.
China pledges major emissions cuts.
All of those pledges and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Humankind can no longer afford to ignore the repeated warnings of nature.
Oh, really? Just watch us, China. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, you promised me we have big news in today's Green News Report.
Oh my, yes we do. As we go to air, the 11th annual Climate Week is underway in New York City when business, government, activist, and community leaders meet to discuss solutions to the climate crisis.
That's the big news?
We're getting there. It's primarily virtual this year due to the global pandemic. Many corporations and governments have announced commitments to cut their contribution to greenhouse gas emissions that cause dangerous global warming. Walmart, financial giant Morgan Stanley, Ford, and Facebook are among the corporations that announced new commitments to reach net zero emissions in their operations in coming decades.
Coming decades? That doesn't seem very big.
Well, it doesn't happen all at once. It takes time.
Okay.
Britain's Prince Charles, however, urged the companies to do more.
Billions of people around the world are waiting and longing for concerted action to right the balance of this planet that we have so rashly disrupted. Millions of younger employees of countless companies and corporations are desperate for action, not more words.
Well, that's slightly bigger.
Well, in the biggest announcement, on Tuesday, Chinese President Xi Jinping increased his country's pledge to cut their emissions under the landmark United Nations Paris Climate Accord. China announced that it will scale up its national climate target to reach peak emissions before 2030. That's a change. And carbon neutrality before 2060. That is a big deal.
Okay, that's a big deal.
President Xi echoed leaders of the European Union in pushing for a green revolution to accelerate the transition away from fossil fuels. Now, climate policy experts noted that details on China's plan are thin so far, but they did call it the most significant positive climate development globally since the signing of the Paris Agreement.
Then why do Republicans and Donald Trump keep telling us that China will never do anything about climate change?
Because they are lying.
Oh.
Donald Trump's withdrawal of the U.S. from the accord, the only nation in the world to do so, will come into effect the day after the presidential election on November 3rd. Speaking of the presidential election, according to the Nonpartisan Commission on Presidential Debates, the six topics selected by moderator Chris Wallace of Fox News for the very first debate between Donald Trump and Democratic nominee Joe Biden on Tuesday will not include climate change. A new analysis by Media Matters has found that half of the handful of climate questions asked by Democratic presidential debate moderators were asked with a right-wing framing and failed to inform the public about the climate crisis and potential solutions.
So Fox News' Chris Wallace just won't ask about them at all. And why should he? It's not like climate change has been a topic of note of late, given the fires up and down the West Coast and the endless hurricanes smashing into this country. But yeah, what do I know?
Speaking of those wildfires, if it seems to you like wildfire season is getting worse, you're right. A new study concludes that climate change has driven, quote, an alarming increase in the incidence of simultaneous heat waves and droughts in the United States over the past 50 years. And the data indicates that U.S. extremes of heat and dryness are self-intensifying, meaning more heat causes more drought and vice versa, which causes more fires. And finally, some major good news.
By 2035, in the next 15 years, we will eliminate in the state of California the sales of internal combustion engines.
California's Democratic Governor Gavin Newsom, citing costly pollution and climate impacts like the mega fires that have raged across the state this year, signed an executive order on Wednesday directing state regulators to require new cars sold in the state to be electric or otherwise zero emissions within 15 years.
We are setting a new marker. We're advancing the cause to once again lead not only this nation, but in many respects lead the world in terms of establishing a framework where we can accelerate innovation, we can accelerate adaptation and adoption, and we can in turn grow the economic pie here in the state of California.
And in doing so, he says, the state will generate jobs in building out a clean, reliable electric grid for the state and installing a statewide electric vehicle charging network.
All electric cars in California by 2035?
That's the idea.
Now that's big news. Thank you, Desi Doyen. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Not diesel, steam, or gasoline.
And so that takes us into the second hour of the program. Nitwit Nero, of course, is in. It was Jack. Okay. Jack in Shreveport says, yes, it was me that sent you the tidbit about that Sonny Hostin said. I got some other tidbits, some verified and some that look like they're true, but I think that we need to wait for the proper people to look into this whole pile of crap before we believe them 100%. Going to spew out a few short tidbits on Daniel Cameron I found in many different short sources. I found no long-form material on him or sources that explain his motivations or beliefs. Here, then, Jack says, is a brief story on the life of Kentucky Attorney General and lickspittle Daniel Cameron. He grew up in Louisville, Kentucky. He was a good student and was given a scholarship to one of the local high schools where he played football and was active in student government. I don't know why or if there were perks, but the scholarship had the name attached to it of McConnell. He went away from Louisville for at least some amount of time for college or jobs, and at some point he returned and switched to getting a law degree. He did some law company work. He did some legal work in government. At some point he started working for, wait for it again, Mitch McConnell, and McConnell ended up mentoring him. Some people have said he's McConnell's protege. I've seen him described as such myself, yes. And he's married to McConnell's daughter, and there have been suggestions they have a kid. That's all, folks, says Jack. Lou with a good question. Has the Russian COVID vaccine been administered to Trump? All we can do is speculate. But in the non-speculation department, a Russian cosmonaut who took off for the International Space Station announced that, no, he, by God, would not be taking glorious leader Vlad Putin's the Russian vaccine for COVID, because the cosmonaut announced that it had not been sufficiently tested. How's about that? Oh, and Sparky reminds me, and I had seen this earlier in the day as well, it will probably be a bad day in Portland this Saturday. The brown shirts, I mean Proud Boys, are going to, that gang of violent incels. The Proud Boys are going to hold a rally on Saturday at a park near the Columbia River in North Portland. They will, of course, be there to brawl with people opposed to fascists like the Proud Boys. According to the Proud Boys and the story that Sparky sent along, The rally is being held to demonstrate the love of the Proud Boys for American and Western values. They tried to get it set for downtown, but they got themselves moved to a place called Delta Park in North Portland because they claimed that there was an overwhelming amount of interest from across the nation. Sickening little punks. Yeah. Antifa activists. Can't really say they're members because it's not an organization. But Antifa and other people who oppose fascism are well aware of the event, and they're going to be holding their own rally on Saturday. On Saturday in Portland, they're going to have music and food and speeches about 4 miles away in another park, which means, of course, that the Proud Boys will probably then start marching. The police bureau chief of Portland, Chuck Lovell, says that those who attend the rallies need to show restraint.
Due to the heightened rhetoric and many recent events where crimes occurred, we are developing a thorough plan to do everything possible to keep everyone safe.
Which means, of course, that as in prior cases, the Portland police will stand by and let the Proud Boys beat the hell out of whomever they want. And the minute that anyone opposed to them so much as says boo, they will be descended upon with crushing force by this said police department. Portland Mayor Ted Wheeler, on the other hand, said yesterday, "Some in these groups," meaning Proud Boys, "and many who associate with them, embody and empower racism, intolerance, and hate. Those are not Portland values, and they are not welcome. We're working with a wide variety of partners from around the region and the state to keep our community safe this weekend." Yeah. So, if you're watching your TV Saturday afternoon, you'll probably see evidence of fascist brawling. Back to the White House for a minute. Kali Maganini went to the podium in the White House press room today because she was upset. Damn it. Nitwit Nero may not have heard the chanting of vote him out, and honor her wish, but by God, Kali did. That good, good Christian woman. She always shows up at the podium with a little cross around her neck, just reminding her of Jesus. Yeah. Also showed up with bare shoulders. She might want to check in with Amy Coney Barrett to see if it's okay for her to show up at the podium dressed like a harlot with those bare shoulders. I'm sure that Amy Coney Barrett's little radical Roman Catholic organization, what is it, People for Female Obedience or whatever it is, sit, Liberty, do not approve of naked shoulders. Not naked, damn it. That's just the state of something being unclothed. But, you know, when a woman like Kali Maganini does it, it's naked, which is being unclothed and up to something. Oh, she didn't like it a damn bit that they chanted vote him out there at the Supreme Court.
Coming up today at the Supreme Court, when the president approached, was paying his respects to Justice Ginsburg, there were some people in the crowd that started to chant respect her wishes, to uphold her wishes. Do you have some thoughts on those chants, which also, included vote him out?
Yeah, I think the chants were appalling, but certainly to be expected when you're in the heart of the swamp. I travel with the president all across the country, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Florida, Nevada, and everywhere we go, the streets are lined with support like I don't think any other president has had previously. But with regard to precedent...
Yeah, shut up. It was appalling. You know what's appalling, Kali? Well, you're appalling. Children in cages in concentration camps are appalling. Young black women being murdered in their sleep by police is appalling. That's appalling. But I guess in maggot world, you can be appalled at anything that doesn't involve the abject worship of an orange maniac. Well, here's a good question from Lou. Why doesn't Nitwit Nero approve the use of the Russian vaccine in the U.S.? Give him time. If he doesn't have a vaccine by November the 3rd, you can bet he will. Or I'd say, you know, late October. Yeah, I wondered about that Western values line myself. Ron in Raleigh says, Western values? Does that mean they're going to commit some genocide on some Native Americans? Well, only if nobody's looking. Then again, people like South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem has been trying to get a good genocide going for a while now in her standoff with the tribal nations trying to keep the disease-bearing white people off their land. Western values, I kind of wondered if that meant that they were going to show up in nothing but chaps with their pale white asses exposed. Westerns. Yeah. Maybe a cowboy hat. Or lariat. Something like that. Western values. Yeah. Now, let's run over to the stress line and see what's going on. Hey, welcome to the program.
Yeah, Bob, hi, it's the Billable.
Hey, Billable, what's happening, man?
Hey, I am following the news here about Trump's attempt to hijack the electoral vote.
Right.
By trying to get in touch with maggot Republican governors, maggot Republican legislatures, for example, I think Florida and Arizona come to mind, where you have a maggot governor, a maggot state legislature, to try and convince them that no matter who wins the popular vote in their state, to basically present an alternate set of electors on Election Day, as, of course, Trump's banking on winning on Election Day, and then forwarding that to Congress. And there would be, like, two competing slates of electors. You know, Trump will try and, you know, even if he loses certain states electorally, he's going to try and say, hey, I won them, you know?
Yeah.
And that's extremely scary. I mean, if,
Well, and there's a total of nine states where that can happen.
Yeah. 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 Like Joey said, I know that, I think the states are, at least the battleground states that have that situation are Arizona and Florida, and I guess Ohio as well, probably.
Yeah.
And what are some of the other states? I know Pennsylvania's got a Democratic governor, but they've got a Republican legislature, I think. And New York has, I think, one of their houses is.
Yeah, I think it's the Senate.
And he's. Yeah, he claims he has Pennsylvania in the bag. I don't know how exactly. Claimed at a rally, I guess, last week that he had Pennsylvania in the bag and he was going to make a play for New York. And this this harkens back to the 1876 election, Rutherford B. Hayes versus Samuel Tilden.
Yep.
And, you know, I figured out, Bob, there were in the previous program, I told you about this, there were four contested states. And I think what the Democrats, which were the slavers, they wanted to end Reconstruction. They basically had, I think, Democratic legislatures in Louisiana, Florida, South Carolina, and there was, I guess, a faithless elector in Oregon that they persuaded to go with Tilden, even though Hayes had won the popular vote in all of those states. And so they basically coerced out of the Republicans the end of Reconstruction through a popular vote loss. you know, and Hayes ended up having 185 electoral votes to Tilden's 184. You know, Hayes had like about 250,000 more votes overall nationwide than Tilden. But, I mean, you know, this just tells us how fucked up the Electoral College is. Why do we indirectly vote for a president? We indirectly vote for, we vote for a slate of electors who then will vote for the guy that we wanted to vote for.
You know what? Ask
totally absurd.
Build a time machine, Billable Rick, and go back to 1787 and ask all the Constitutional Convention delegates from the slave states why they wanted that.
Right. Well, of course, I know that. But,
and of course, Alexander Hamilton was a friend to slave owners.
Right. I mean, it actually makes no sense in the modern era, and this century so far, the Republicans have only, I think, had a popular vote victory once in how many elections? I guess that's about five now, right? Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Five elections so far. And we're going into the sixth one. So, I mean, I think what we have to have is we have to have a total victory by the Democrats.
It has to be overwhelming.
Yes, it has to be overwhelming. And there also have to be some Democrats, I think, that vote on Election Day, even though it's dangerous. The way that Trump has set up these legal challenges to try to knock out, get rid of all those other ballots. Get rid of all the, you know, mail-in ballots because of fraud. You know, because of the way they've set it up, I think Democrats have to get out there and vote on Election Day. I mean, it's dangerous, but, you know, I guess think of it as like a trip to the supermarket, and hopefully you don't have to wait in line too long, you know?
Yeah.
Just because of COVID Caligula, you know, it's total bullshit. But, you know, what is one to do? We don't want them to win on election night either, because technically, I think in the Constitution, the electors are chosen by the state on election day. But, you know, as a matter of procedure, that date has been, like, postponed. There's, like, a grace period until, like, December 14th, I think, when the electors actually go to Congress and then cast their votes for the president.
Well, yeah, there's another wrinkle in all of this, Rick. And I go back. Okay. I go back to my own experience here in West Virginia's primary this past June. They wasted no time here in West Virginia announcing the winners of the various primary elections on election night. And when I asked why, it was because they had been counting absentee ballots all along.
Okay.
And so really wasn't much left to count after Election Day. Now, if that happened...
Okay, so there weren't like ballots in transit. Yeah.
Well, I'm sure there were still some, but they had enough of the absentees counted that in conjunction with the in-person ballots cast, the absentee ballots that were out could not change the outcomes.
Right.
You see what I'm saying?
Right.
And quite often with absentee ballots, that's the case, or has been in West Virginia. If you've got an election and there are and the margin of victory thematically could not change the outcome, they don't bother.
Yeah.
They don't even count them.
Well, yeah, that's true. I mean, they don't even count them. There you go. Yeah, I guess. Point as long as there's a concession from the loser. I mean, so much of American politics, Bob, even though we're, you know, our country's about 250 years old almost under the Constitution, not quite, so much of it is based on norms that developed over time. Like, for example, the loser, you know, concedes the election and isn't a butthead and doesn't, like, challenge every possible thing in court, you know? And that's been totally upended by Trump's declaration that, well, you know, we'll just have to see, you know, wait and see. I don't know. I'm, let's get rid of the ballots and then we'll be fine. I'll just continue as president, you know? And if he,
you there? Available.
We have certain states seceding from the union. As it's like, okay, this is bullshit. You know, if it's clear that he's rigged it, but I think we're going to have like the Western states secede and form their own compact.
It can't be done. It can't be done.
Yes, you can. Well, you can.
No, that was all settled after the Civil War.
What he's done.
There's no secession anymore.
No.
That's settled law.
Okay, well then I guess there's a civil war then. You know? Because I can't imagine people just laying down and taking it again, you know? I mean, how many times are you gonna be Charlie Brown and try and kick the football and Lucy like moves the football away and you fall on your ass, you know, as you kick the ball?
Rather than leaping to the idea of secession, what I suspect is that if any of this skullduggery goes down, there will be a million people in the streets of Washington D.C.
Yeah, well, a million's not going to be enough. You're going to have to have 10 million somehow, you know, and just camp out. Don't leave. Just refuse to leave. How are the authorities going to move, you know, 10 million people? Well, let's say 5 million. Let's say 5 million. Let's be more realistic. That's a big number. Yeah, let's say 5 million. You know?
Let's see. 3, 2, what, we're a month and, not even a month and a half now. We're a month and 9 days out from this.
We're not.
And it's just going to be a matter of the temperature being raised a little bit more every day. I'm looking at a story right now, available from let me see here. From the Now This News. In North Carolina today, he claimed, well, let me run the audio.
The America First health care plan includes another historic provision to benefit our great seniors. Under my plan, 33 million Medicare beneficiaries will soon receive a card in the mail containing $200 that they can use to help pay for prescription drugs. Nobody's seen this before. These cards are incredible. The cards will be mailed out in coming weeks. I will always take care of our wonderful senior citizens. Joe Biden won't be doing this.
And Donald Trump shouldn't be able to do it. That's just plain old-fashioned vote buying. Down in southern West Virginia,
it used to take the form of
a fella showing up with a trunk full of pints of Four Roses and passing out pints of whiskey and just remember who gave you this whiskey. Well, $200 $200 to betray your country. Cheap, huh? Well, hey, Billable, let me do something else. Let me do something else here. We can have another little mini roundtable this week because your brother at the bar, Steve in New York, is online. Hey, Steve.
Ah, there we go. Okay. Hey, Steve.
Good evening. Hey, Billable. Can you hear me okay?
Oh, yeah.
Hey,
I was listening I was listening to something you guys said about choosing the electors and what's in the Constitution. The Constitution is at once very clear and at once super ambiguous as to how each state chooses their electors. All it says is that the states shall choose their electors. And basically, the states will say, you know what, I actually just looked at this today. I'm going to go ahead and get the exact quotation so that we're not hemming and hawing and farting and burping, as Mike Malloy says. And we'll just have it Article 2, Section 2. States very explicitly what each state shall appoint in such manner as the legislature thereof may direct a number of electors equal to the whole number of senators, yada, yada, yada. So it seems to me what that says is each state, I mean, it may very well be that the federal government can say, here's when you have to do it by, but each state gets to choose their electors however they want. Which is why, you know, in some states it used to be the legislature chose. I guess the
senator, for example.
But you know, onerous as it is, and you know what, this may actually be a bit of a saving grace because there is so much. There are 50 different ways that states do it, theoretically, which may. Make the task of polling the shit that Cocknocker wants to poll that much harder because there is a lot in each state, or there is a lot of ways to do it. But each state can do whatever they want.
I mean, I think Steve, I would think that most states have a specific law or laws that govern how they choose the electors in a presidential election.
Well, and the way that
I think for many of these states, you'd have to change the law in order for them to give the popular vote loser the electors in that state.
Well, I think what it is each look, what do we know right now? Each state chooses their electors via a popular vote in that state. However, I can promise you that each state has. That's not the only method. There are contingencies in which you in which case you might have a disputed election or a disputed you know, whatever. And I think Bob said there are
nine
states that are what? Those nine states?
They're in play.
Battlegrounds, I guess.
Well, in terms of being able to have the requisite power structure in place to dummy up their electors.
But it would probably be interesting for us to look at those nine states, and you know that's a huge research project, which I may just do because it sounds fucking interesting, and I just like being right about things. Oh, by the way, Bob, did you see I've nominated?
That's always helpful.
Yes, you not only nominated me for a Nobel Prize, but a mobile prize.
A mobile prize,
for my status as an amateur Uber driver.
A mobile prize.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
There you go.
Yes. So I may look at that because I can.
You got two prizes in one.
Yeah. Yes. There is the and given that they are both imaginary prizes, you have an imaginary life supply of sex clams that go along with that.
Oh, goody! I can use those.
Yes. Are they from north? Are they from northern Alabama? Though?
That's the only place. That's the only place you can get sex clams. That's why they're North Alabama sex clams, billable.
An endangered species, I'm sure.
Yes. Yes. You know, I gotta say, guys. Just when you think you can always inject sex clams in any conversation to kind of bring the tone down a little bit. But back to this thing, it would be interesting to look at each of those nine states and see what is the hierarchy of ways in which they get to choose their electors. Now, if you remember, what Bush versus Gore, bad as it was, what that highlighted. Is that while the states can pick the manner in which they choose their electors, they can't do it in an unconstitutional fashion, which means they couldn't say, here's how we're going to do it. Anybody who is black, they get their vote is 3/5, and like I wonder where I've heard that before. And whereas all white voters are one, that would be illegal. Because it violates the 14th Amendment. I mean, if you can get into it, you can think about a million scenarios that could completely gum up the works. And I wonder if Trump's the strategy is less about getting these competing sets of electors as it is about getting to the 14th of December, or is it, I think it's December 14th, when the electors are supposed to meet, and having certain states have had not had them chosen, which then
chaos is the goal.
Yes, at that point it gets put
then it
into
goes to the house.
House,
and we know that's going to be a 26-24 vote possibly in the House because 26 of the congressional delegations are Republican. I think like 22 are Democrat and 2 are like evenly split. It was Pennsylvania and one other state I forgot.
What is Nebraska? So, Nebraska?
Yeah, that's the goal.
Well, Nebraska's that weird. They've got a unicameral legislature, and they split their delegates.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. It's proportional.
I think you get two delegates. I think they have two districts or whatever. So you get one delegate each if you get the district, and then if you get if you win the whole state, you get another two delegates electors.
Right.
And so it's a total of 5, I think, or something like that. Well, 4 or 5.
Right,
but I'm looking at 538. Yeah.
Can I just tell you something? You want to look at a look? I am a huge not fan of Nate Silver. I think Nate Silver is a charlatan. If you want to look at a real good site for statistics and knowing shit, Princeton has called the Princeton Election Project, where the guy who does it. Professor, I think it's Professor Sam Wang, is an actual statistics professor at Princeton, and it's kind of high. I find it it's super statistical. So some of the shit on there, I don't understand. He tries to break it down for idiots like me, but it's look, I like to analyze data and do my own data, but getting into a meta analysis and shit like that. That's over my head, and that's really high-end statistics. But Sam, but Professor
I'm there.
Wang,
I'm there. Yeah. I went to the map. Right now, he has Biden with 335 and Trump with 187.
Right, and I think he has.
So he has Biden taking Florida, North Carolina. He has Trump taking Ohio. He's got Biden taking. Did I say North Carolina already? Yeah, I did. He said Biden taking Arizona, Nevada, all the upper Midwest states, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and basically the entire East Coast, even that weird district in Maine that sometimes goes Republican.
I find him to be much more. He's much more honest. Yeah. I mean, if you ever do a little research to Nate Silver, what you find out is he pulls some shenanigans where he will make quote unquote predictions before the election, and he'll find out what happens on election night, then change his predictions to make him look like he was right when he really wasn't.
That's not cool. Sam Wang has 52 Dems, 48 Republicans in the Senate.
And Randy in PA reminds us. Nebraska has 3 House districts and thus 5 electors, 3 House, 2 Senators. Maine also apportions their delegates according to House districts.
Right. Look, here, I have...
But I mean, I think, I have, you know...
Go ahead, Rick.
I was going to say, Steve, I think the big prize here is Pennsylvania. Nate has that as his tipping point state, as far as, I heard something that if Trump wins Pennsylvania, he's got a very good chance of getting elected. And same thing with Biden. If he gets Pennsylvania, he has like an 85% chance of getting elected or something like that.
Right. Here's what I think.
So yeah, I'll
Okay. Look, if all things being equal, meaning if I could trust that Trump's not going to try to mess with the count, vote count and all that. My personal opinion from what I've seen is I would say Biden would win. It's close to 99.9%. But and the other thing too is this is, I don't, I remember when we first went locked down in New York, and or when we were first starting to lock down, I had to go. My pharmacy that I get my regular meds from is in a part of the city that's rather far from where I am now, because I used to live in that part of the city, and changing a pharmacy it just sucks. Particularly, I have Costco as my pharmacy, so the prices are very good. And I was up there, and I was actually, I had started reading The Hunger Games. And I was up there and kind of looking around as restaurants and everything started closing and shutting down. And I'm standing at the bus stop, and I'm looking around, and I'm thinking, I'm reading The Hunger Games, and I'm thinking, wow, there's this, we are living in this weird freaking dystopia.
Oh, I've been living in District 12 for a while now, Steve.
Oh, so you know, have you read the books?
And occasionally visiting District 9 to say hi to the aliens as well, right?
Right. You know, I got to tell you something. I got to tell you something, Bob. Every time I hear D.C. referred to as the capital, I keep thinking of that book. Because that's how I don't know. You know, we've talked about this a million times. Everyone here in the family has talked about this a million times. And I can get my head around it intellectually, my mind around it, but I can't get my heart and soul around it. Is we're really on the precipice. I mean, we really are. This is not hyperbole. I mean, we really are going to be in a position where I don't see how we avoid confrontation in the streets, whether that's peaceful, whether that's.
Well, what do you think? What do you think? Shit like what's going to go on Saturday in Portland is a dress rehearsal for? I mean, I'm not being a pissant, but
No, pissant away, because it's clear what it's for. I mean, but Bob, think of what they were
doing earlier.
Go ahead, Rick. I'm sorry, I interrupted you. Go ahead.
No, that's fine. I was going to change the topic just a bit. I mean, I drive around here like in Orange County. And there's like fucking vendors with Trump flags and Trump t-shirts and so forth on the sidewalks and shit. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's almost like, I almost expect to see like billboards with President Trump's picture on it all around the place. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's talk about like worship of a leader. I mean, it is such a cult. The cult of 45. I mean, it's so, you know, how can these people, they're so far into it, they don't realize, you know, that their mind now belongs to Trump, basically, you know?
I'm just waiting for them to call him their big brother. Because, of course, none of, you know, Trump fans.
Yeah, or maybe.
They don't read.
Or maybe
so
Grandpa, Dad. Yeah. Call him Dad. They could call him Dad.
It would never occur to them that Big Brother came from a dystopian pop novel. You know, because they don't read.
No.
They don't know how to read.
They think that Big Brother is the jackbooted government thugs that are going to come and take over the world in black helicopters, and we're going to become a one world, or a one nation world, you know? That's basically their view of Big Brother, you know?
Well, look, this election is about turnout, you know, this is one of those times. Go ahead.
Yeah, you know, I was going to say, Steve, this bullshit about the Trump, you know, saying that he may not concede. Maybe he's just trying to discourage people from voting for Biden, just because they'll say, well, my vote's not going to matter, because even if Biden wins, Trump's still going to be in the White House. I wonder if some of that is going on, you know?
Yeah, you know what I think? When that reporter asked him if he would support the peaceful transition of power, and he said we'll have to take a look at it. First of all, I think it's everything you said. If a more intelligent, sentient person had said that, I would be even more. I mean, it's chilling to hear him say that.
Well, and he weaseled on it later, saying,
Well, I'll accept the results as long as it's a free and fair election. But that's, again, weaselly.
Yeah.
Because he will be the one to declare what constitutes free and fair.
Right. And exactly. The other thing too, gents, is I think his go-to response for everything is we'll have to wait and see. So in one sense, it's chilling. In another sense, I'm not even so sure he even knew what the question meant. So it's kind of like he says that about everything, whether or not he even knows what he's answering. But then in the other direction, there's not one person who has, you know, two brain cells to rub together, who doesn't look at that and can see that we could see him refusing that. There's nothing that he could do that we would be like, we would be, you know, it's back to the I'm not surprised, but I'm shocked, because you're not surprised because something happens, because you'd expect that from a
you're not shocked. You're
shocked because
you're not shocked, but you're surprised. It's like, okay, I've seen a lot of this shit. I mean, I'm surprised the guy said he wouldn't concede, but you know, based on all the other stuff he's done. You know.
But why wouldn't I expect that? But then on the other hand, you think, but I'm surprised. He actually said it out loud, and that's the you understand what I'm saying,
The
analogy I use with a friend of mine is I call it the parade of aliens. Like if you saw walking down the street 1,000 little green men, and you knew for a fact they were aliens. You knew they were. They came from planet Norblap, mm-hmm. and they were actual aliens. And you'd be seeing them, and you'd be like, I see them, but still there'd be this cognitive dissonance in your mind saying, I know I'm seeing them, but I can't be seeing them, even though I am, because this is so outside the realm of what I expect to see.
Right.
Well, kind of like when the Twin Towers fell on September 11th, 2001, right?
Yeah. 2001. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was unbelievable. It was like a movie. It like wasn't real. And this guy here, it's like a movie. It's like
this guy. Oh,
it's like the Apprentice presidency. It's like, you know, he's trying to keep the suspense. That's okay. Wait till tomorrow. Wait till next week's episode. Yeah.
Right. Rick, it's so funny you say that, because I was in law school when that happened, and I went to law school in Newark. So I had just come through.
Wow.
I had just come through. Oh, no, my tax professor who taught at St. John's was a visiting professor at my school, had just come through the commuter train that starts at World Trade Center and comes to Newark. She'd just gone through that day. And I remember after it happened and we couldn't go anywhere. Thank God my partner, he lived in Newark in the Spanish-Portuguese section of Newark, or Spanish-Brazilian-Portuguese section of Newark, so I had a place to stay. But I remember walking through the ground floor part of my law school building, and while I walked by one of my professors, and I said to him, this truly is surreal. I
mm-hmm.
like you just said, you see it happen. But it's that event sits so far outside of your experience that you, on some level, you can't actually believe exactly. You can't believe your eyes.
That's why they kept showing it over and over. They kept showing it over and over because it was so unbelievable. My kid was in first grade when it happened. You know, we didn't go to school. He didn't go to school that day, obviously. Oh, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you went to St. Johnson? Is that? I didn't know that was in.
No. New
York.
The visiting professor was from St.
Oh, he was from St. John's. Okay.
She was from
New York, I think, right? Yeah.
Yeah, that's in Queens. She was.
Okay.
I mean, I went to Seton Hall, which is in Newark.
I didn't know Seton Hall was in Newark.
Okay.
Well, the law school's in Newark. Sure. The main campus is in West Orange, New Jersey, which is a really nice, highfalutin, hoity-toity stick okay. your nose up at all the working
yeah,
class.
Yeah, Newark, not so much.
No, Newark.
Well, I've got a little bit of pushback yeah. on your argument about Nate Silver. Subject line statistics. This comes in from Suman. Bob, I have to chime in. Nate Silver's not a quack. He actually posts his full methodology on his site. He doesn't look for what happens on election night and then update his probabilities. He changes probabilities based on previous events. As an example, each poll is weighted based on its statistical accuracy, and then the probabilities of the election are changed based on the results of each poll. The reason his probabilities change on election day also is because his model recalibrates itself based on the results of each state as they come in. He also takes into consideration a hidden vote for Trump. For whatever reason, no one else does this, even though that is exactly what happened in 2016. Statistics is what I do mostly for a living, so I'm not just talking nonsense. I'll check out the Princeton site. Perhaps it uses a different methodology, which is totally fine. I realize it's comforting to look at polls that have Biden on top, but it's also good to look at reality and then do the actual groundwork to get this orange ass out of office. And I get a lot. I mean, I couldn't run a chi-square if my life depended on it. But still, I get what Suman's saying. And when I see these numbers, I'm skeptical anytime I see a poll result that's got Biden up by 10, because even an English major like me knows to look at the margin of error and then do the ciphering in a worst case scenario.
Yeah.
Unless it's Biden by 20, we're not safe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nate Silver has Biden right now 52.8 to 45.9, and he's got a 77% win chance. What Biden has, or what Nate Silver has right now, so 6.9% spread.
Yeah. As far as Suman, I understand. I still remain a big skeptic of Nate Silver, and there's actually an article where Professor Wang writes about Nate Silver, and I mean Professor Wang finds him to be a rather unscrupulous guy. I'm exactly okay. like you, Bob. The first thing I think about is how many of those people in that poll are Trump people who don't want to claim they're Trump people,
or are just lying because they're Trump people,
or people who don't want to say they're voting for Biden. I mean, there's probably a fair number of people who say they don't want to vote for Biden. I mean, let's be honest.
But isn't that what the margin of error is all about?
That's part of it, but it's also because you can't.
And also sampling error as well. You can't
ask every single person in a population. You have to take a sample. So that's why you have to
weight it according to certain assumptions.
The larger your sample is, as long as it's a normal sample, which means random sample, or a random sample, which produces a normal distribution, as long as that sample, it's not just the bigger the sample, the better. No, it's the bigger and random the sample is. That's how your margin of and what
right.
Your level
so every you know every time I see one of these, so national polls drive me crazy. Because they're meaningless. Mm-hmm. And so every time I see, like, you know, today I saw a national poll that had, you know, Biden up by 10. And I'm thinking, well, how many of those respondents, because they're all telephone polls. Telephone polls, get it? All right. They're all telephone polls. And I ask, you know, how many of those people are in California, New York, Massachusetts, Washington, Oregon, Illinois?
Right.
Well, you would think that they would weight them. They would I don't know how they would weight them.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's interesting you say about national polls.
They do.
I think national polls are useful in the extremes. Like if you have a person ahead, but if you have a person consistently ahead by 15 points. You know, you know, even if, and given the size of certain states, which while properly represented may skew the result, but there's nothing wrong with that. It gets to a point where the smaller states or the less populous states can't overcome that. So on the extremes, you know, if it's 1 or 2 points, it's meaningful only insofar as 1 or 2 points, or even probably 4 or 5 points, means it's a toss up.
Right, and David in South Carolina, Stan, echoes that, and I will echo David. David coming at this subject line.
I lost that echo. I lost that echo. Yeah. Go ahead, Bob.
David in South Carolina, Stan, says, no lead is ever safe. As a Gamecock grad and fan, I know that no lead is safe. Remember, messing with polls was one of Michael Cohen's duties. And as a Mountaineer fan, I also know that no lead is ever safe, because it is as if the Mountaineers were the Democratic Party, eager to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. You can't protect a lead. You cannot play prevent defense.
Yeah,
bore people with a football analogy, the only thing a prevent defense does is prevent you from winning the game.
Yeah,
right.
I mean,
it's true.
Let's be honest.
So
the best offense, the best mm-hmm. defense, is a good offense, especially in politics.
Right. Right.
And when we, you know, when we talk about when we talk about Nitwit Nero and what constitutes a free and fair election, our pal Shorty in L.A. Sent along a clip from yesterday, based on a question by a reporter saying, "Well, what happens if you lose?" Let's check that audio.
Well,
nerds.
Oh, naturally, there's a fucking ad. So that'll be over in a minute. And, yeah.
I mean, I just hope Biden has an election protection team that's really good.
They
and
do.
Looking at all these state laws regarding...
They
you know,
do.
How electors are chosen and so forth.
You know how
good,
I know?
Good, okay.
You know how I know they do?
Good.
Because
yeah.
I know they do because I
got
a text message.
Friends that are in it?
I got a text message from the campaign asking if I would be interested in going to Florida to do election protection. I responded and said I would.
What'd
I don't want to
say?
Go to Florida. I responded by saying I would not go to Florida, but I would go to Ohio.
Okay,
Pennsylvania.
So I've got the clip now. Let's check this out.
Today.
Want to play?
Son of a... No.
Yeah.
Apparently we're going to do another fucking ad.
So are you going to go to Ohio, Steve?
I contacted the Democratic Party there. I never heard back. I responded to the person who texted me from the campaign. I don't know if I've heard back because it went to spam initially.
Uh-huh.
If I can get a hold of somebody, I very likely will.
I know how dedicated you are, Steve. But let me just interject this: you're living in New York, and y'all have gotten your rate down below 1%.
Bob, can I just tell you something?
Don't go to Ohio and die.
Wait a minute. You're going to think I sound like a whatever here. I would much rather it's a risk I'm worth taking, giving this is life and death here. I'm sorry. I mean, you said that.
Steve has developed herd mentality, so he'll be okay, Bob. He's got herd mentality. He'll be fine.
Yeah, I've got herd mentality, right.
Moo, y'all. Moo.
Yeah.
Oh, that you remember the droopy cartoon. Moo, y'all. Moo, y'all.
No. All right, maybe we've got the clip this time. Let's see.
Okay. Let's go for it.
Nah, we're not going to have the clip. I'm just going to have to read the transcript, okay?
Mm-hmm. I'm just going to suggest
okay,
that.
Okay.
So what he said was...
It's more entertaining anyway, Bob.
What he said was, get rid of the ballots and you'll have a very trans, you'll have a peaceful, there won't be a transfer, frankly, there'll be a continuation. The ballots are out of control, you know it, and you know
who knows it better than anybody else? The Democrats know it better than anybody else.
And as Shorty points out, the operative phrase there is get rid of the ballots.
Yeah.
I mean, the best part of Trump is he tells you what he's going to do. I mean,
yeah. By the way, I've been
transparent. People almost don't believe it.
I've been awarded the cowbell by Jeremy in Vermont for moo y'all, moo y'all. Give yourself a cowbell, Jeremy says, or move over.
Moo y'all.
Move over, right?
Oh my gosh.
The Moo Bell Prize.
Oh.
No. Do not even entertain a cowbell.
No, I wasn't. I was going to take one away.
I was just going to say that that's a negative cowbell, which I would fully support.
Lee in New York, subject line predicting.
That's like a tuning fork. Yeah.
Subject line predicting. Lee in New York says, from electoralvote.com, based on state polls, strongly Democratic 213, likely Democratic 56. That's equal to barely Dem, equal, barely GOP, likely GOP, strongly GOP, but that only matters if there are votes and they get counted.
Wait, which site was that?
Electoralvote.com.
So electoralvote.com.
Okay, because I was looking at it right. Oh,
so 213,
I see.
213 solid Dem, 56 leaning Dem.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it only gets you to 269.
And 36 barely.
And they've got Florida's 29 votes, and Florida's just white.
Yeah, which means it's tied.
Yeah.
And I want to tell you, here's what I'm going to, you know what, putting all that stuff aside, I will tell you what the other thing that gives me at least some confidence in this is the fact that we have Texas, Iowa, Florida, Georgia, so close. That tells me.
Well, yeah. Florida and Iowa are dead heats.
Yeah.
But the idea that Texas is barely Republican,
that gives me a lot of confidence, frankly.
Spend the money right.
And Georgia.
Campaign
Georgia.
Right.
Georgia's even a closer race than Texas. Georgia's even more of a toss-up than Texas.
Yeah. Look, I mean, you know? The other thing. Do here's you know how you know what's really going on in the Trump campaign? You see where he's going. Isn't he going to Texas here soon?
Yeah, right.
Well, today's North Carolina and Florida.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
he's losing in both states, according to Nate Silver.
In 2016 he won Florida by 1 point. The fact of the matter is this.
Mm-hmm.
He spent time in, I thought he was spending time in Texas. I don't know why. And then you also look at where he's not going. He's not going to, where did he go to Minnesota? Has he been to Wisconsin?
Yeah. And he's been to Michigan.
He's down by like 10 points.
And he had that massive super spreader rally in PA this weekend. He went to Western Pennsylvania.
Oh, geez.
He went to Western Pennsylvania and had a super spreader at the airport there in Moon Township, just outside of Pittsburgh. Yeah. And
there was a time when Western Pennsylvania
and they were packed. They were packed butthole to belly button. There wasn't a mask to be found. And the LARPing and the smolikin and the grabulating and the lollygagging was for the ages.
Well, the big good thing about that, Bob, is they'll all be dead by Election Day. I know that's a horrible thing to say, and I'm just kidding.
I mean, look, your beloved Ohio is listed on this map as
vote in person.
Your beloved Ohio is listed on this map as barely GOP.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, there are
tilting Biden.
I mean, there are a lot of indicators that are not just who's winning, that, you know, certainly in a normal year would give me a lot of confidence that Biden is going to win.
South Carolina, that should be blood red like Alabama and Mississippi, is pink.
Yeah, 6 points.
Likely GOP. And David tells us that Trump's ahead by 5 points. Trump's ahead by 5 points in South Carolina. 5 points. Mm-hmm. But Jamie Harrison is slightly ahead of Lindsey.
And I'm going to tell you something. I will say this. The Jamie Harrison Lindsey thing, I think there is a significant overcount. I don't want to say significant, but there is a measurable overcount in favor of Harrison in the polls. And you can tell me if you think I'm right about this or not, because people don't want to people to think that they're not voting for that voting for him just because he's black. So I wouldn't be surprised if Lindsey is actually at least a little bit ahead. But again, what that tells you is that tells you intensity, and it also tells you that just because Jamie Harris is it Harris or Harrison?
Harrison.
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 He may lose by a couple points, say, but what that tells you is that the turnout. But think of up ticket and down ticket. Anytime. You have more people voting, that's going to favor Democrats every time, wherever it is.
Well, it shows that the pubes are on the defensive all over the place, is what it shows you. If they're having to spend a lot of money on a South Carolina Senate race with a Republican incumbent, the pubes 100%. Are in trouble that way from that standpoint. I'll start calling that. We get called the Democrat Party, right?
That's Newt Gingrich horse shit.
I think I call them the AFP. I don't even call their GOP Republican Party. I call it the AFP, which is the American Fascist Party. I don't call them Nazis.
Oh,
I get sick of people calling them Nazis because they're not Nazis. They're fascists. Yeah. Nazis specific to Germany.
They're fascists. Yeah, I mean, Trump fashions himself as another Mussolini, I think, more than a Hitler.
Look at those at those damn pictures. And Mike Malloy used to say this all the time, where he sticks that chin out.
Now, I said that.
Mm-hmm. With his mouth wide open and snarling.
And crosses his arms. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Why do you think one of our earliest nicknames for him was the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini?
Mar-a-Lago Mussolini, yeah.
Yeah. You know, what I find interesting, it looks like the challenger to Joni Ernst is ahead, at least in this Princeton Election Consortium website I'm on, which I find interesting. I think the vote, if the Republicans vote on a Supreme Court nominee before the election, I think it's going to cost them a couple Senate seats, possibly as much as two Senate seats. Obviously Collins is gone. I think Cory Gardner's probably gone.
Well, looking at the map here,
probably gone.
Collins, Thom Tillis, Cory Gardner, Martha McSally. Yeah. They're all in danger.
Yeah. And then Montana could flip.
Montana, the noted hog deballer, Joni Ernst. Could go the way of the dodo.
Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe Thom Tillis thinks he's helping himself. But today, speaking to a virtual town hall audience, Senator Thom Tillis said, when the final accounting's done, the actual COVID-19 death count will be lower. We've inflated the death number from COVID-19 to encourage people to use social distancing.
Oh, geez. I would say it's probably undercounted by a factor of about 10, Bob.
And by the way, that is straight out of QAnon, okay?
Yeah.
Let's be honest here, guys.
That one, Georgia Let's politician be on- about that yeah. man who's going to become a House member.
Is it something Taylor something?
Yeah, Steve?
Oh, Marjorie Taylor Greene?
Yeah. Let's be honest here.
Yeah, there QAnon, you go. Yeah.
QAnon is the Tea Party of whatever time we're in.
Yeah, only nuttier. Only nuttier.
Yeah, that's who's going to take over the GOP.
Yeah.
Let me tell you something really interesting, Bob, on that electoral vote thing. Look down at the where it has the Dem, where it has the Senate Dem pickups versus 2016 GOP pickups versus 2016, and it says none. Which tells me that in Alabama,
they expect Doug Jones to survive.
Tell me that wouldn't be just a goddamn
thumb in the eye.
Hey, look, there's because of the nastiness, and I mentioned this the other night, because of the nastiness and the rightward, it's not even a lean, it's a full-on capsize to the right between Kelly Loeffler, who compared herself to Attila the Hun, and Doug Mouthful of Collards Collins, who shit on a dead person in the form of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Between those two people, if Joe Lieberman's kid would get the fuck out of the way, the leading Democrat would have a chance of taking a Senate seat in Georgia. And tell me that would not be like a, that would not reach, it would be the functional equivalent of the New Madrid Fault going full on, you know, Richter scale 9 in this country.
You know, I wonder, John, if Bob, I wonder if there's any way of basically engineering either a dead boy or a live hooker in Joe Jr.'s bed or whatever. You know, who knows? Probably not. Lieberman. You know.
What happened to your audio, Steve?
Oh, sorry about that. What would really blow your mind is if Doug Jones won in Alabama and.
Right.
We got a Democratic senator in Georgia.
Yeah.
That would be just
That would give us about 54, I think.
And those are and those are two and those are two seats that will be held for 6 years. The same with Jamie Harrison in South Carolina stand. MJ Hager is not dead in the water in Texas. I mean, granted,
the
Democratic nominee in West Virginia doesn't have a snowball's chance in hell, but you know, that's no surprise.
I just started to glisten. Hey, Bob, I just started to glisten.
I got some. Yeah, there you go. Hey, I got some news here off of electoralvote.com.
Yeah.
It said the schedule set for confirming new Supreme Court justice. Trump, of course, has said he's going to announce it on Saturday, and then the Senate's going to begin hearings around October 12th. The full Senate will then vote on the confirmation on the week of October 26th, a week before the election, but long after millions of voters have already voted. So that's apparently what Mitch is planning on, a vote during the week of October 26th, which is just right 1 week before the election. So, you know, that's not enough to piss people off.
Well, you know, if he's going to nominate Amy Coney Barrett, she's horrible, she's a nightmare. But it is not nearly as dangerous as if he was gonna lunatic
Florida
in Florida.
Woman.
Yeah, if he nominated Florida woman. Which reminds me, there was one other observation I wanted to bring forward, and with Florida being exactly tied according to electoralvote.com, this. If you recall the final tally in the governor's race in 2018 in Florida, Ron Monkey Up DeClantis only beat his Democratic opponent by a little more than 0.4%. The one story we do not have out of Florida so far is the Nazi robocalls. I maintain that those Nazi robocalls made the difference in Florida. Jungle drums and minstrel show, black voice on the recording, you know.
Right.
Well,
yeah.
Those stories haven't popped yet. But I would be surprised if we don't hear them or see stories like that in the fairly near future with regard to Kamala Harris. Because I'm sure the Nazis have, I'm sure the Nazis still have robocalling money.
Yeah, you know, we haven't heard much about Harris at all lately.
and see, still, think, President Shit for Brains won't even have to go as far as Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis did and say, well, I disavow this. I want nothing to do with it. Meanwhile, with a nudge and a wink, understanding that he just knocked down the hardcore racist Klansman vote, Nitwit Nero won't even bother to disavow it.
They're very fine people, those robocallers.
Oh, and by the way, I had a note from Darlene earlier. Interesting you should mention Bush v. Gore, Steve from New York, because Trump invoked its ghost today, did he not? In other words, by stating the SCOTUS will decide the November 3rd presidential election if he loses because it will be rigged if he loses. And who was the last executive branch official to mention Bush v. Gore before the House Judiciary Committee recently? I think you know. Ooh, no wonder Trump and Mitch want to ram RBG's replacement through beginning this Saturday. One of many steps toward a soft coup. Wise is Darlene in Connecticut.
Oh, by the way, along the lines of...
You did it again.
Well, see, the thing is... Yeah?
Hello?
Yeah, you're a million miles away again.
Oh, you're off, Steve?
Oh, sorry. I had the microphone. I flip up over my glasses. No, but what I was going to say, on that same site, Rick, that has that you got the thing about the news, there's also an article there that says the RNC is sending money to Texas. Sent 1.3 money to the Texas
Chamber. Is that right? Oh, I see that. I scrolled down. Wow.
Yeah. Wow. When the Republicans have to spend extra money in Texas, that hurts.
That hurts. Uh-huh. And for me,
that's money they can't spend in the upper Midwest.
Yeah.
Bingo.
Or in Pennsylvania. Yeah.
Because, you know,
Pennsylvania is where it's all at, guys.
Yeah. We all know that Trump completely squandered that huge war chest he had. And I have to tell you, whenever he says, he's going to spend his own money to win, you know, the conversations that Bob and I have go through my mind is like, you can't spend what you don't got, douche. He's not rich. That's why he says he's rich and says he's going to spend all this money, and he doesn't, because there's nothing to spend.
Yeah.
How much has the RNC already spent on his fucking legal bills? How much of that could be buying ads right now?
Mm-hmm.
And on his kids' legal bills? Right. And putting all those little petty pissant grifters and cut purses on the payroll, you know, Kimberly Gargoyle and whatnot, Laura Trump.
Hey, Lyme Agony, I love that.
and you'll find this interesting. Darlene sent me along the story a minute ago. Precious Lindsay actually went on Fox News to beg for campaign cash. He said, I am being killed.
Oh,
I am being killed in fundraising. Well, that dovetails with the note from David in South Carolina, Stan, saying, Jamie's raised a ton of money. Lincoln Project is running free ads for him and against Lindsay. Jamie has several Republicans who used to support Lindsay who are in Jamie's TV ads here talking about how you can't trust Lindsay. Finally, our state, remember, has a 37% black population. And if they are able to go to the polls and vote, and let's say, 2% break for Trump, but you get a massive turnout in South Carolina by the other 35%, you don't have to add just a hell of a lot of white folks to that. To make Precious Lindsay a lobbyist instead of a senator. And then he can live happily in D.C. and I'm just relying on you for Where are the happening gay clubs in D.C., Steve? Do you know? Or has it been too long?
It's interesting you say that. I mean, the gay part of town is DuPont Circle, but the best gay clubs, at least when I was there, were over in Southeast D.C. and kind of one of the worst parts of town. It probably was because the real estate was so cheap. I think that was actually the first bar I went to that had actual go-go boys. But anyway.
Oh my.
Yeah, it was a friend of mine took me there and I don't even know what the hell you'd call it. Weird? Just flat out weird. But you know, the one thing that's coming through from our conversation here is this, is that the numbers don't look bad. In fact, they look good. The wild card here is the shenanigans that Trump is pulling, and the stuff that he will pull. We have a person.
I think that's turning off the moderates, Steve. Like your average American, maybe who used to vote Republican and is kind of in the middle now, or.
Oh, I don't know, Bill. But I mean, look at my poor bedraggled West Virginia. Yeah. Now, Joe Manchin, and it's not often that you're going to hear me utter these words, so you know, mark the date. Save the tape, you know, like Lindsay said.
Yeah, right.
It's not often I say I agree with Joe Manchin, but I do. I agree with Joe Manchin in this regard. Now, he didn't touch on the racism aspect of it, and that was most decidedly there, and had been since 2008. But the racists in West Virginia who had voted in favor of the Republican candidate both times when Obama was running, you know, I just don't think we're ready for one of those in the White House. That's what one West Virginia woman said. That was in 2008. Well, they're racist as fuck, the so-called conservatives in West Virginia. But what Joe Manchin said that was true is that they are so simple, they will buy into anybody who comes in and says, we're just going to mine so much coal, oh, everybody's going to have a job as a coal miner. All right? And it was in Charleston, West Virginia, that Trump put on a hard hat and then pantomimed digging coal with a shovel.
Oh,
that was at the Civic Center in Charleston, West Virginia. That was at the same time that he said,
don't bother going out and voting for me in the primary. It's okay. I'm going to win anyway. What I want you to do is go vote for Bernie. Go vote for Bernie.
And they did. And so the simpletons bought into it.
He's
gonna bring coal back. We're gonna be mining more coal than we ever mined before. But the fact of the matter is, and Joe was right about this too, more coal jobs have been lost during the Trump administration then were lost in all 8 years of the Obama administration. You remember when there was an Obama war on coal. Well, there's no signs around here for the Trump war on coal. In fact, right there in Fayetteville, I see it practically every day. There's a sign at the intersection of Main Street and U.S. 19 that says, Jim Justice sign says, Jim never gave up on coal. Yeah, but coal gave up on West Virginia. And so the poor little maggots are sitting there. The poor little maggots are still sitting there, sticky, broken, confused. They got fucked, and they can't quite figure out how to blame it on people who aren't in fucking power. And our Democratic Party here is so goddamn moribund that we can't nominate a slate of candidates with a. Well, it's not true across the board, but we have a hard time nominating a slate of candidates with a rat's chance in hell of unseating an incumbent Republican. Natalie Tennant's got a chance against Mac Warner in the Secretary of State's race. I hope Bob Beach has a chance in the Ag Commissioner's race. Ben Salango is not the best candidate, but he's getting my vote against Jim Justice, and there may just be enough people pissed off, maggots even, pissed off at Jim Justice that he'll get bounced. I don't think, but it could happen. But the one place that we need it most, the Senate, there is... I lack the mathematical skills to express a concept that is less than 0%. There is a less than 0% of unseating Shelley Moore Capito. And by the way, I got to thinking about
That's
it earlier...
mathematics, Bob.
I got to thinking about it earlier today. Shelley Moore's last name is Capito. That means head. The people of West Virginia, no kidding, sent a woman to the Senate of the United States whose name is Shelley Moore Head. Which, for all intents and purposes, is what she's been doing for Donald Trump for the last 4 years.
You know what? That would be a great whisper campaign. That would be a great...
Yeah.
I mean, if the Democrats really wanted
to
play some...
I think the guy that's firing has her fully in her clutches. Yeah. Hey, guys, I got to jump off. I got to talk to my boss here before he leaves. So,
I do, too. It's great to talk to you, Rick.
Yeah.
This has been a wonderful little roundtable. I've appreciated, but we've had two fantastic roundtables this week, mini roundtables.
That worked out pretty good.
Yeah, not front porches, but I don't know a Tuesday and a Thursday. A Tuesday and a Thursday on the veranda. The veranda.
I was going to say on the picnic bench.
No, not the veranda. The gazebo, because gazebos is smaller than verandas and porches.
There you go. You got it.
One last question for Rick.
All right,
One last question. How's the fire situation where you are?
I smelled a little smoke this morning. I shut my windows. It's kind of off and on. So far, it's burned. The fires have burned up into the National Forest, Angeles National Forest, like north of the city. And I guess it's consumed about 115,000 acres. It's still burning. I don't know what the containment is, maybe 20%. So far, we haven't had the Santa Anas. I'm praying that we don't have any Santa Anas for a while. You know, they do tend to come probably by late September, early October. Sometimes not till late October, but that's the wild card with the fires down here is the Santa Ana winds. That'll spread everything like crazy. Unfortunately.
Stay safe.
Hey, you too, Steve. Take care.
Take care.
All right, Bob. All right. Take care.
Will do. Thanks, Billable. Thanks, Steve. Both of y'all take care. You hear?
Yep.
Bye now.
Bye now.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Thursday in the gazebo. That's what that was. And if you were trying to get in on the stress line a minute ago, that's open now if you want to jump into the conversation. Let's see here. Note coming in from Greg. I kind of like the Moo Bell Prize. Speaking of cows, y'all, here's one of my sister girls' rants that I've also posted over at T-Busta Haughty's Discord site. Not to worry, folks. I do have copyrights from dear sister girl Abby Laurie to share it. Postscriptum, Abby Laurie originally expressed this comment in a ranting blog of hers on Facebook. Abby Laurie's been friend requested on Facebook by Seth Meyers and Russia, Rachel Mad Cow. She was really excited when they asked her to be on their contacts, especially the one from Seth. I told her if she ever chats with Rachel to tell her she has my old hairstyle and I want it back someday. I am a cow whisperer, so I will translate Trump's last message as the herd mentality really said to his big bubble-ass herd. Moo!
Moo, 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 moo.
Pop, plop, plop, whoosh, squee, plop.
Moo, 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 crunch, chew, crunch, moo, 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 blat, squeak, plop, bloop, drip, drip, drop, moo, 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 squish, blat. Translation. There's no vaccine going to be ready before the election, but voting has started. I need your votes. The losers and suckers aren't going to help give out the invisible vaccine. I've insulted them too much. Puerto Rico is one of those shithole countries you said would never get another penny from me. Hurricane Maria was in 2017. Fart, fart, fart. If I was going to help them, why now? I just said that because I want the Latino votes. Fart, fart, poop, poop, fart. Any money that goes to Puerto Rico goes to the wall to keep the shithole criminals, the caravans of shitholes out. Fart, fart, poop, plop, fart. Oops, gotta go. I shit my pants and forgot to wear my Depends. Oh, yeah, voting by mail is a scam, even though me and my family do it all the time. Poop, fart, gotta go. Oops, already did.
Yeah. Hey, thanks to Jeremy. Again, we're not fundraising for the remainder of September, but Jeremy just said, I sent a tip along to ease the Uber life. You didn't choose this life. Uber chose you. Thank you, Jeremy. Thanks a bunch. Much appreciated. And things are pretty dry right now, as a matter of fact. Paid bills. Jude, with a note in the, from the Great Northwest, says, Lindsay responded to his tweet on Fox interview. I wrote that I didn't hate his guts, which is verbatim of what he stated. Continued in my tweet, the reason I'm supporting Jamie Harrison on a monthly basis is that Lindsay lacks integrity, and Jamie is a light for integrity, and his focus will be for the people, pure and simple. Lindsay's a big crybaby, and after all the wrong roads he's chosen to walk on in reference to Trump and negating our country's dire needs, well, enough is enough. Warmly, signed, Jude. Well said, Jude. Well said indeed. He has chosen the wrong roads. He chose poorly. All right, back over to the stress line. Let's see who's there. Hey, welcome to the program.
And maybe you chose wisely. It's Darlene.
Hey, Darlene.
Hey, I was the one that was trying to call in before, and then when I heard that beep, 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 I'm like, oh, crap, I'm interfering with... I couldn't remember if Steve and Billable were Skyping or...
No,
one was on the stress.
Yeah, one was on one was on the other.
And my apologies for that interruption, but I have a morbid question.
Yes?
It's morbid. Okay. We can do morbid. Okay, we can do morbid. I've been obsessed with watching the Lying in Repose of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, which is still going on. It's now, nighttime in D.C., and there's still a stream of people, predominantly a lot of women. I've seen some men, but I don't know if you've been watching it, but there's a lot of women that have been coming to pay their respects as she is lying in repose. Now, and again, I want to apologize ahead of time because of my ignorance as someone that was brought up Catholic, although I've been told I look Jewish, which I mentioned before
right.
in previous calls. My understanding is that when Jewish people bury their dead, they do not embalm.
Correct.
They try to bury their dead quickly. So, Ruth, she died, my gosh, last Friday, because it was during Friday on the Front Porch, I think.
Yes.
When you announced for passing. So, we're talking almost a week here. So Ruth is still lying in repose at the top of the steps of the United States Supreme Court. What are they doing to preserve her? Because her remains, is there some kind of a refrigeration unit?
No.
This is disgusting.
No.
But is there a refrigeration unit under her in the...
No.
Okay.
No. Maybe there is, and I don't think a refrigeration unit would maybe, rabbis give out dispensations all the time. I mean, an observant Jew can, for instance, let's say a baby is sick, and the only way to save the baby is to give the baby medicine that is derived from pork.
They'll do it.
The rabbi will say the life is more important than the law, and say go for it. Something like that might obtain here, but here's my better guess. And by the way, in the Jewish faith, you get them in the ground in a hurry, and the same thing applies. The 24-hour rule applies with Muslims as well. It's something that arises out of that hot and hateful climate over there, because the one people they were rebelling against in a way was, of course, the Egyptians, who invented embalming. So it's a rejection of that goes way the hell back. But the larger answer to your question is that modern caskets have a vacuum seal. Once they lower the lid, they pump out all the air, and so it becomes more difficult for the process of decomposition to take place.
Okay.
So that
I'm surprised that she has a standard size casket. I figured it'd be a lot smaller, but she was such a tiny woman.
Yeah,
you know, she barely clocked in at 5 feet. She was so tiny. So are you saying that she was more than likely the family request embalmment and the casket being sealed like it is?
No, I'm saying there's probably no embalming. There's no embalming. It's just the vacuum. Okay. It's just the vacuum seal.
The vacuum seal, and oftentimes I wonder, are they really in there? I've always wondered,
Darlene.
That. Are they really actually? No, I'm serious. You know, I'm so cynical. Maybe it's just me being cynical, not in the sense of I have anything to gain out of it, but just being just jaded, I guess.
Yeah. No, I know.
And I just, I'm looking at it right now with the volume turned off on C-SPAN. People are streaming in. It's now, you know, 7:45. They're still coming and paying their respects. And, so, you know, she's been lying there in repose for many, 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 many hours. And it was just so, you mentioned the child wearing the, I think the whatever little shirt she was wearing. There are a lot of children that
Supergirl uniform.
The Supergirl uniform. So many of the kids, and it's just wonderful. And again, I think predominantly a lot of women and young women, older women, mothers bringing their children as well to this viewing and educating. You could see them bending down and talking with their children about who she was and educating them. And some of the kids, even little boys, one woman came with two little boys with the collars, the special collars, like the crocheted white ones.
That she was famous
Justice
for.
Justice Ginsburg, she even, yes. And she even had, this woman had her two boys had them around their necks, including her. And I'm just thinking that this stuff is beautiful. They're teaching their children about what this woman meant to jurisprudence. Thankfully, very short ceremony. In the atrium of the Supreme Court building, which you rarely get to see, and the rabbi was a woman. You must have seen that, the ceremony, which I never knew that a rabbi could be a woman. So again, my ignorance.
Oh gosh, yes.
Again, I apologize. And her voice was incredible. She had a beautiful voice. And just the haunting, like, what she's saying and the words and the sounds and the Hebrew words, or again, I'm so ignorant, I'm probably using the wrong vernacular. But she, I think it was so symbolic and fitting that it was a female rabbi. And just the way that she sang this, and you had mentioned before you picked up on my call, about Muslims, when she was singing, it sounded very much, was reminiscent to me of the very haunting sounds of when the Muslims call people to prayer.
The muezzin. Well, what you okay?
When they yell it out, or not yell it, but they it's you know what I mean? It's
yeah, it's the call, it's the call to prayer.
Projected through, yeah, the call to prayer. I think it's very similar.
I think the word is muezzin, and the rabbi that you were seeing may well have been a cantor, because a cantor is the one who sings in Jewish temple synagogue practice.
From the back, like the president, you know, the douchebag there, and is and Valcrest did, but there was some woman that looked very much like her, and there were a couple of gentlemen, like almost like security type dudes, one of whom was holding her purse, and a guy ain't gonna hold a purse unless he's being paid to do it, you know.
Right.
So it's basically that it's still going on. So I'm just curious about this because I've always wondered about it, you know, especially with the heat, especially like when I was thinking about John Lewis, with his, you know, with his lying in state, and being transported from Joint Base Andrews and all of that. And it was a very, very hot hot August day. I've just wondered, like, how do they keep the bodies, you know, from,
right,
like you said, you know, decaying. So I guess that the coffins are really key in what you're saying.
I think it's a valid guess that this is a matter of vacuum sealing. As Lee in New York pointed out, you mean they stuffed her in Tupperware? Well, really high class Tupperware, and Lee, who knows far better than I, being out, Lee's got his Jewish Union card. Reform and liberal synagogues have female rabbis. The Orthodox do not.
Okay, that makes sense to me then. Okay, thank you, because that explains it. I used to write grants for a Jewish community center, and the Jewish communities, they're incredible. The way that they, the structures and the infrastructure that the Jewish community sets up in various, you know, at least in Connecticut and elsewhere, are quite impressive. But they're still there. It's all lit up. I think it's beautiful. The flowers that are the berms there that are with the flowers in front of her coffin.
Well, with the if you will permit me, with the nature of the question you asked, which is not morbid but rather earnest curiosity, you reminded me of something that Mark Twain wrote, and I'll share a little bit of it with you in the remaining time we have. It's hilarious. I remember the first. There are some things he wrote that will just destroy you to this day. One of them is the experience of the McWilliamses and the membranous croup. Another one is the McWilliamses and the burglar alarm, and they're written those two stories are written about thoroughly modern Connecticut families. So you might want to look those up. This one, however, is called The Invalid's Story. And the first time I read it and subsequent times after, I can be reduced to absolute paroxysms of weeping hilarity. So he writes, and when we get there, you'll understand why you reminded me of this.
Okay.
I seem 60 and married, but these effects are due to my condition and sufferings, for I am a bachelor and only 41. It will be hard for you to believe that I, who am now but a shadow, was a hale, hearty man 2 short years ago, a man of iron, a very athlete. Yet such is the simple truth. But stranger still than this fact is the way in which I lost my health. I lost it through helping to take care of a box of guns on a 200-mile railway journey one winter's night. It is the actual truth, and I will tell you about it. I belong in Cleveland, Ohio. One winter's night 2 years ago, I reached home just after dark in a driving snowstorm, and the first thing I heard when I entered the house was that my dearest boyhood friend and schoolmate, John B. Hackett, had died the day before, and that his last utterance had been a desire that I would take his remains home to his poor old father and mother in Wisconsin. I was greatly shocked and grieved, but there was no time to waste in emotions. I must start at once. I took the card marked Deacon Levi Hackett, Bethlehem, Wisconsin, and hurried off through the whistling storm to the railway station. Arrived there, I found the long white pine box which had been described to me. I fastened the card to it with some tacks, saw it put safely aboard the express car, and then ran into the eating room to provide myself with a sandwich and some cigars. When I returned presently, there was my coffin box back again, apparently, and a young fellow examining around it with a card in his hands and some tacks and a hammer. I was astonished and puzzled. He began to nail on his card, and I rushed out to the express car in a good deal of a state of mind to ask for an explanation. But no, there was my box all right in the express car. It hadn't been disturbed. The fact is, without my suspecting it, a prodigious mistake had been made. I was carrying off a box of guns, which that young fellow had come to the station to ship to a rifle company in Peoria, Illinois, and he'd got my corpse. Just then, the conductor sang out, "All aboard!" And I jumped into the express car and got a comfortable seat on a bale of buckets. The expressman was there, hard at work, a plain man of 50, with a simple, honest, good-natured face and a breezy, practical heartiness in his general style. As the train moved off, a stranger skipped into the car and set a package of peculiarly mature and capable Limburger cheese on one end of my coffin box, I mean my box of guns. That is to say, I know now that it was Limburger cheese, but at that time I'd never had heard of the article in my life, and of course was wholly ignorant of its character. Well, we sped through the wild night, the bitter storm raged on, a cheerless misery stole over me, my heart went down, down, down. The old expressman made a brisk remark or two about the tempest and the Arctic weather, slammed his sliding doors to and bolted them, closed his window down tight, and then went bustling around here and there and yonder, setting things to rights, and all the time contentedly humming In the Sweet By and By in a low tone and flatting a good deal. Presently I began to detect a most evil and searching odor stealing about the frozen air. This depressed my spirit still more because, of course, I attributed it to my poor departed friend. There was something infinitely saddening about his calling himself to my remembrance in this dumb, pathetic way, so it was hard to keep the tears back. Moreover, it distressed me on account of the old expressman who I was afraid might notice it. However, he went humming tranquilly on and gave no sign, and for this I was grateful. Grateful, yes, but still uneasy. And soon I began to feel more and more uneasy every minute, for every minute that went by that odor thickened up the more and got to be more and more gamey and hard to stand. Presently, having got things arranged to his satisfaction, the expressman got some wood and made up a tremendous fire in his stove. This distressed me more than I can tell, for I could not but feel that it was a mistake. I was sure that the effect would be deleterious upon my poor departed friend. Thompson, the expressman's name was Thompson, as I found out in the course of the night, now went poking around his car, stopping up whatever stray cracks he could find, remarking that it didn't make any difference what kind of a night it was outside, he calculated to make us comfortable anyway. I said nothing, but I believed he was not choosing the right way. Meantime, he was humming to himself just as before, and meantime, too, the stove was getting hotter and hotter, and the place closer and closer. I felt myself growing pale and qualmish, but grieved in silence and said nothing. Soon I noticed that the sweet by-and-by was gradually fading out. Next, it ceased altogether, and there was an ominous stillness. After a few moments, Thompson said, "Phew! I reckon it ain't no cinnamon I've loaded up this year stove with." He gasped once or twice, then moved toward the gun box, stood over that Limburger cheese part of a moment, and then came back and sat down near me, looking a good deal impressed. After a contemplative pause, he said, indicating the box with a gesture, "Friend of yourn?" "Yes, yes," I said with a sigh. "Pretty ripe, ain't he?" Nothing further was said for perhaps a couple of minutes, each being busy with his own thoughts. Then Thompson said in a low, awed voice, "Sometimes it's uncertain whether they're really gone or not. Seem gone, you know, body warm, joints limber and so, although you think they're gone, you don't really know. I've had cases in my car. It's perfectly awful because you don't know what minute they'll rise up and look at you." Then, after a pause and slightly lifting his elbow toward the box, "But he ain't in no trance! No, sir, I go bail for him!" We sat some time in meditative silence, listening to the wind and the roar of the train. Then Thompson said with a good deal of feeling, "Well, well, we've all got to go. There ain't no getting around it. Man that is born of woman is a few days and far between, as Scripture says. Yes, you look at it any way you want to. It's awful solemn and curious. Ain't nobody can get around it. All's got to go. Just everybody, as you may say. One day you're hearty and strong." Here he scrambled to his feet and broke a pane and stretched his nose out at a moment or two, and then sat down again while I struggled up and thrust my nose out at the same place, and this we kept on doing every now and then. "The next day he's cut down like the grass, and the places which knowed him then knows him no more forever, Scripture says. Yes, indeedy. It's awful solemn and curious, but we've all got to go one time or another. There ain't no getting around it." There was another long pause, and then, "What'd he die of?" I said, "I didn't know." How long he been dead? It seemed judicious to enlarge the facts to fit the probabilities, so I said, "Oh, 2 or 3 days." But it did no good, for Thompson received it with an injured look, which plainly said, "2 or 3 years, you mean." Then he went right along, placidly ignoring my statement, and gave his views at considerable length upon the unwisdom of putting off burials too long. Then he lounged off toward the box, stood a moment, and then came back on a sharp trot and visited the broken pane, observing, "'Twould have been a dumb sight better all around if they'd started him along last summer." And we're about halfway done now.
Seems judicious.
But you might want to look it up and finish it, because it will give you a mighty chuckle. The invalids.
It already is. Oh, jeez.
Yeah. I mean, it.
And just, oh, shit. Wait, and you know, and just, yeah.
But pretty soon it was plain that something had got to be done. I suggested cigars. Thompson thought it was a good idea. He said, "Likely it'll modify him some." We puffed gingerly along for a while and tried hard to imagine that things were improved, but it weren't any use. Before very long and without any consultation, both cigars were quietly dropped from our nerveless fingers at the same moment. Thompson said with a sigh, "No, Cap, it don't modify him worth a cent. Fact is, it makes him worse because it appears to stir up his ambition. What do you reckon we better do now?" And
yeah, and that first hit from the cigar, boy, that is like wonderful, but it doesn't last very long.
I got an idea. Supposing we buckle down to it and give the colonel a bit of a shove towards t'other end of the car, about 10 foot, say. He wouldn't have so much influence then, don't you reckon? I said it was a good scheme. And Thompson proceeds to begin promoting him. The next time he refers to him, "You reckon we started the general any?"
And
of course, that's, you know, beautiful. It's all public domain, so you can get it on the internet.
It gets right down to the nitty gritty of those kind of.
And I'm sure that, and I'm sure that was written in Hartford.
Oh yeah, we can lay claim, I think, to him. Which I'm proud of, and you know, just looking at C-SPAN right now, the crowds are even bigger in the background there. They have them lined up. This is going to be a long night for Ruth. Thank goodness for the vacuum seal. And there, I don't know if you heard this. There was some idiot who kept yelling Jesus, about Jesus being the only one that saves you, or
oh,
something
please.
Like that. Did you hear that? Yeah. I don't know if you did.
Yeah, I saw.
The guy would not shut the fuck up, and it's like, come on, seriously? But anyway, because she, obviously she's Jewish, so, you know. It's getting late there in DC, and it looks like the crowds are even bigger. So,
bless their hearts for the display of respect.
Bless their hearts.
You got a note from Jude for Darlene. Your heart is wide open, so please know we're all collectively grieving. Being able to give words to this loss assists all those who are traveling the same path. Reverence and respect are dignified companions. Take good care, Darlene. Peace. Jude.
Thank you, Jude. Love you. She's awesome and what she's doing.
She is an angel. And the boots and the flowers are going to Seattle this weekend. So
cool.
she will take the women standing and make a stand in Seattle. And well, it is an amazing act of spirituality. By the way, I screwed up, Darlene. Did I misspell Lee in New York writes? Not liberal Jews, conservative Jews. Conservative Jews and reform Jews will have female rabbis. The Orthodox will not. And conservative Jew is not a combination of politics and religion. So, yeah. The saying goes, we regret the error.
We regret the error we're learning. And that's even, you know, to Chief Justice John Roberts' credit, he used that word learning in reference to Ruth Bader Ginsburg. She was always learning, which we are. I think he could stand to do that as his other colleagues could. But, this is hitting people pretty hard. I think this is the signature passing of the year, because we wanted her to survive, and she wanted to outlast this freak in the White House and try to get us into 2021. So somebody who could be appointed that was suitable to replace her, and whoever Trump appoints, because they're itching. And there's like part of me that is looking at this and say, I take such great comfort in these last 2 days of her lying in repose and then tomorrow lying in state. But what's really scary is that once that's done, Saturday comes and they're gonna push forward and replace her with some subpar individual. Black draped seat
I think it's safe to say they're gonna replace her with a religious maniac.
Yes.
And that's not me. That's not me decrying all practitioners of faith. It is that these people are chosen specifically because they are religious maniacs.
Exactly, and like I had mentioned previously when you were on that veranda with Stephen and Billable, he's picking people that potentially will do a Bush v. Gore for him, so that he can, become the dictator that he's dreaming to be. And we're in a very scary, this is bad. This is scary. So,
How about that? The Republicans who term limited the president to 2 terms thought that they were preventing a potential dictatorship when in fact they were just pouting over the fact that FDR beat their asses every time they stepped to the plate. And it turns out the dictatorship may potentially be hatched by a 1-term the 10-pot piss ant. So much for protecting the Republic by term limiting the presidency.
Exactly. Well, he's already exceeded his term already. As I mentioned before, he's had 5 years of Supreme Court appointments, which will be cinched potentially on Saturday, and then when they ram it through.
And the you know, the fact
the groundwork's being laid.
And the rule of law.
Thank you, Mitch McConnell.
Yeah, and the rule of law is a laughingstock now, because the fact of the matter is, no president who has been impeached, never mind whether he was convicted, no president who has been impeached should appoint a third Supreme Court justice.
Oh, that's a very good point. He's been impeached too. Yeah, absolutely.
Yep. Well, Darlene, I'm gonna roll
okay,
out
I'll
of here.
Go. Yep.
I gotta go.
All right, thanks, Bob.
I think I'm gonna get a nap before I go pick up Ferg at freaking midnight.
Okay. All right, Mr. Uber driver.
Uber driver.
thank you for entertaining me and at 8:08. But I'll let you go.
Well,
thanks, Bob.
Go and finish the invalid story.
I will. I shall. It'll be fascinating to finish that. Thank you for sharing it with the horn and with me. All right. Good night.
See you, Darlene. Bye now. Our pal Darlene calling from Connecticut. Sorry about the dead air there. The fab machine just crashed out of nowhere, so I had to recover it all and get it back up and running and reboot and all that. Fortunately, it boots very quickly. And now apparently I'm being frontiered, Brother Deacon Asa tells me, but there is no frontiering. I'm not seeing any buffering whatsoever on this end. So go figure. I don't know. Thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air. Thanks to all of our subscribers, PayPal and Patreon alike. Thanks to our a la carte contributors. Thanks for the Uber tip this evening, Jeremy. Thank you very kindly. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thanks so very much for all you do, Brother Deacon. Brand new Malloy on the way at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, right here on headon.live. Best place to listen to the Malloy program. Thanks to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Stay safe. It's getting worse all over the world. Israel, France, England, the UK, it's bad. Hungary is in bad shape. And, of course, we've been in bad shape all along here in the new 90 states of Merca. Stay safe. If you have to be out and about, by all means, please wear your masks, wash your hands, use your hand sanitizer, take hand sanitizer with you, maintain social distancing of 10 feet, not the 6, but the 10 that Paul from Parts Unknown advised us about. And for pity's sakes, if somebody's coming towards you hollering, "Jesus is the only salvation," avoid that person like the plague, because they are. Later.